So welcome to another meeting. And I will turn this over to Lori.
Yeah, we'll start with agree with you and saying just welcome to our new staff. We're really excited to have you a part of the D41 family. We truly are honored that you chose us as well. It means a lot, and being able to speak with many of you, the impact you're going to make on our students on a daily basis will be absolutely important for their lives. So thank you for being a part of D41. Lori, I know you want to do a quick introduction.
We have about 25 new certified staff members that we hired this year. Many of them are here this evening. I also want to thank the principals who took some time out of their busy weeks to come out to support their new staff. We appreciate you being here. So I'm going to start just by introducing name, title, and where they work. And as I call your name, if you could please stand up. John Bradford at Lincoln. He's a school social worker. Beth Marie Byrne at Lincoln, elementary foreign language teacher. Rita Fairborn, she's at all four of our elementaries, elementary orchestra teacher, beginning strings. Julie Clark from Ben Franklin, music teacher. Andrea Teichmiller is going to be working at all five of our schools as our behavior specialist. Stephanie Jack from Forest Glen, elementary foreign language teacher, Spanish. Jimmy Haycraft is at Churchill, level 3 STEAM. John Olden, Hadley Junior High School, science. Mindy Pileski, Hadley Junior High School, Foreign Language, Spanish. Linda Calvo, Hadley Junior High School, Math. Rachel Gates, Abraham Lincoln Special Education Teacher. Rachel Kukulich, Ben Franklin Speech and Language Pathologist. Carly Morales at Forest Glen, Math Coach. Derek Winkleman, Hadley Junior High School, PE Teacher. Walter Flores at Churchill, Elementary Foreign Language. Matthew Bruns at Hadley Junior High School, Special Education Teacher. Mary Grant at Hadley Junior High School, School Psychologist. Katie Purse, Assistant Principal at Forest Glen. And Bob Cusetti, Assistant Principal at Hadley Junior High School. So welcome. We're thrilled that you're here. We've met at least four different times already with new staff. Yeah. 3 days of orientation and induction that we did prior to the school year, and then we met again last Tuesday. We'll continue to meet and hopefully support them through their first year here with District 41. So thank you.
Okay. Yes.
Part, but I have told them that they can go home now.
Yes. Let's just have just a couple moments. We'll let you guys go out. But I really appreciate everybody coming tonight. It means a lot. So please, you're more than welcome to stay, but go.
Believe that. While you still can.
Have a good day tomorrow. Thank you. Is Lori out there with them? Yeah. All right, so welcome back. A couple of housekeeping items. When the board packet went out, we became aware that there were two items from our meeting template that were left off the board agenda. One is board reports, which will be added to the end of the agenda after the superintendent report and before upcoming meetings. And the other item that was left off the template was other, which will be included after upcoming meetings as well. We are also scheduled to go into closed session, so I want to have consent of the board to not go into closed session at the beginning of the meeting, but then go into closed session at the end of the meeting. Any consensus on that? Yeah? Yep. Good. Okay, great. Thank you so much. So we are. Make sure we include those items. All right. Public participation. Welcome. I'd like to remind members of the audience that speakers should identify themselves. Complete a public participation form, which is on the table when you enter the building, and limit your comments to 3 minutes. If your comments have substantially been reflected in others, We would ask, in the interest of time, that you please consider forego making them. And please provide the board with any copies of written material that you may have. That's important to us. We always get those as copies sent to us as well, letters, etc. Personal complaints and criticism about staff members, students, or other members of the District 41 community should be initiated privately with the appropriate district representative. Also, profanity, interruption, and or other interference with the orderly conduct of the meeting are not permitted. All questions raised will be forwarded to the appropriate D41 staff representative for a response as a response is warranted. Is there anyone present that would like to address the board at this time? Carolyn?
Mr. Cooper? Good evening, Jim Cooper. It seems painfully obvious that Mr. Bochinski and Mr. Escalante have no desire to represent their stakeholders on the TRS issue. Instead of a simple decision to send this issue to the full board for a vote on a three-year plan to save the district over $200,000 a year, we are being put through a charade of finding out what other districts do, though it really doesn't matter at all. There will be no mass exodus of the 16 positions involved. In the future, there will be no dearth of applicants for any future administration of those. If the subject doesn't come out of committee for a board vote, both Bochinski and Escalante will wear this if either decides to run for the board again. You'll have to explain, I guarantee, why you didn't want to save the taxpayers hundreds of thousands of dollars, actually over $1 million in 5 years. If you do let this get to the full board, then the stakeholders get to see where you all stand, who represents us, and who doesn't. Mrs. Nelson, it's been 5 weeks since I asked my questions at the budget hearing. Despite your having told us that you would respond to stakeholders' questions, you still haven't addressed at all where the funds for the assistant principal position that was added back 2 years ago are coming from for the school year 2015-16. Specifically that year has not been answered. It's a simple question. And no, you haven't answered it even though 5 weeks of emails with you tell me that you have. Before you answer, I'll try to get an honest response on the on the deduction from the budget comment from Mr. Escalante on June 10, 2013. This meant that the assistant principal position could be taken out of any pocket.
1 minute.
Could be taken out of any pocket, but only after it had been deducted from the upcoming budget. Your response on this is purely disingenuous. I love that word, disingenuous, because both you and I know what it really means. Until you answer these questions honestly, I will keep asking them. Thank you.
Thank you. Mrs. Gust?
Ms. Meredith?
Welcome.
Since the changes were rolled out in the district, whether it's multi-age specialization, PBL, cultural studies for level 3, looping, and longer school days, I have continued to ask for performance data that supports the changes that are being made to our children's day, and, or at least the very least, how we're measuring the impact and the rationale for the continued changes. It was delivered in the fall of last year and again in June, originally promised in February, but not delivered until June, regarding MAP performance at a district level. Based on what was presented, it was not overly clear what the impact was, positive or negative. In Summer in Suburban Life, I believe it was August 15th, there was an article, and in it, it was quoted by Mrs. Carlson and Superintendent Gordon, but I think the, you know, it spoke to the fact that there's been a nice assessment of the RIT scores as it relates to MAP, but the overwhelming is that we're seeing progress in MAP testing, and quote-unquote, Some notable spikes in mean RIT scores were made in first grade math and reading scores. First graders had an actual mean growth of 20.7 points in math between fall and spring and 18.1 in reading. All district levels exceeded projected growth targets. I guess my curiosity is, why are we focusing on first grade when there has been no change to first grade at all? So I'm a bit confused on that. So I guess I ask is, where is the support from a data perspective, whether it's a survey, map, or otherwise, that continues to support the constant change that our children go through year after year? Three questions for follow-up I have. What will happen in the 2016-17 with multi-age for 2-3 that's supposed to happen? So where are we at? And where's the data to support that that's an appropriate change? Second, a survey to better understand and get a temperature check on the changes and the impact that it's having on our students and our teachers and our faculty. And then the third is, when is the next MAP performance update scheduled for the fall? I believe I was told that will be done twice a year, if I'm not mistaken. So that's it. Thanks.
Thank you.
I'd like to add to that, too, like the question about multi-age for next year, I'm curious about, because in our, I know that's something we've delayed twice now, and in our academic update this summer, we didn't specifically call that out, so I'm curious how we're evaluating that to determine what we're going to be doing next year, since it's supposed to expand to second and third grade literacy, and then STEAM for second and fifth. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Mrs. Gust.
Mrs. Brett.
Welcome.
Jennifer Rapp at Lincoln and Hadley. I wasn't going to speak tonight, but then this weekend I was looking at the enrollment report and I saw some discrepancies in it that I had some questions about. I understand that your class size targets are just that, targets, and then it's, as an educator, I know it's not always easily obtained. However, when I went through and I looked at the enrollment chart report, I noticed Lincoln had 3 classes over the target, Churchill had 4, Forest Glen had 3, but Franklin had 12 classes out of 37, if I counted it correctly, which to me is a high amount, including 2 level 3 classes that were at 30 and 31, which is really a lot of kids, and I'm wondering why that is. I also noticed, if I'm looking at the numbers right, that the AEC, Accelerated Enrichment Curriculum kids, seem to be grouped all in one science class, and then they all seem to be moving together for math. And I understand if you're trying to make heterogeneous groups, but that is not best practice to group all those kinds of kids together for their math and science. My last question was, there are targets for Hadley. On the list, on the second page, it says 26 to 28 students per class. And I wouldn't know if you're meeting those targets or not at Hadley because it's not listed, it's not broken apart, it's just grade 6, grade 7, grade 8. So I would like to see that broken apart just to see how many students are in the classes at Hadley. And then we're getting towards that 30 and 31 mark too. Thank you.
Mrs. Rapp,
thank you.
I had one question I was writing here. What was the number of Franklin?
The number I have circled is 12 sections that are above their class target.
Okay, thank you.
Some substantially.
Okay.
Mrs. Gust.
Mr.
Thank you.
Curry.
My question focuses around when time, which was what I need when I need it. It was a part of the think tank model, and I've heard here and there that it has disappeared. I was wondering if taking it away had any effect on either positively or negatively on the think tank model as a whole. If so, how? Was this taking away of this part of the model, which I think was told back in 2013 that it was essential, if it was essential then, and then taken away, why was that not never communicated to parents? Because my daughter's currently in level 3. She's a fifth grader. The other thing I want to talk about was the facilities task force. You know, I went there and we sat down. We were talking about norms. And then Mrs. Nelson sat down and talked about the charge, what we're charged with. And I got from that that we're going to eliminate portables, we're going to right size and better utilize space, and we're going to address all day kindergarten. Dr. Gordon said he was all for full day kindergarten and said it was critical. I'm not sure that the board has talked about this, and this board has talked about this, about full day kindergarten, and would like to see that addressed in the future. Thanks.
Thank you. Mrs. Guest? That's it? All right. Thank you.
And that has truly asked a question that was very unique to mm-hmm. Ben Franklin, what was the answer? 12 class?
12.
No. Which is still a large number.
All right. Thank you very much.
Just for clarification, one good thing is.
This is the updated enrollment
we
report that we have, yeah.
The other one that it was.
This will be posted, the updated one. So.
And maybe that's
yeah.
Because there wasn't, so that everybody knows, there is an updated enrollment report that we received tonight. And there's no class with 31. There is a class with 31. Mm-hmm. So I think I'm sort of running through the numbers. There was 8 classes instead of 12.
So level 3, 35
guidance.
Mm-hmm.
I have 25. Yeah, there's a new report that we got tonight here.
Yeah. Oh.
So that's what I wanted to close.
It'll be posted.
Tomorrow morning.
Mrs. Rath, tomorrow morning.
Yeah. 8's better than 12.
Thank you.
Right.
There was a point on the other one.
Okay, next. On the yes. But on the corrected one.
Was it corrected or was did we have to do?
They're both dated on the 31st.
So I'll speak to this as in my superintendent report.
Yeah.
No, it's fine.
I'm trying to see if there's one wrong, because if we
yeah.
got corrected, okay.
Yeah, there was. Okay. There was, just to address it, since we're already talking about it, like on the Churchill, we had 2 extra sections. If you go down to level 3 on the old one, there were 2 additional sections that didn't add into the overall numbers, but they were placed in there. And then there was level 3 science. Had those numbers, and then one of the pieces that we'll talk about as well is level 3 grade 5 science. It was at 30 or 31, and I can't remember what it was, but in that one grouping only, we were counting students who were being mainstreamed in as opposed to their homeroom class, so it was all counted in. So that's why those changes were made to this report.
Thanks for saying
yeah, no.
And then on the public participation, Dr. Gordon, you did a pretty nice job of following up.
I'll continue that.
Continue to follow up.
Yep.
Yep. Are you going to talk
about the enrollment report later?
Yeah, that's what I...
But I didn't know if that counted or... Because I have some questions.
We can go back to it in that piece.
I'll wait for
you. No, that's fair.
You know what? I just recounted it on the report. There's still a lot of questions.
Dr. Gordon will review. Thank you. Okay, presentations, reports, and initiatives updates. First one is a PTA report. We started this a year ago. PTA Council meets twice a month the morning of the board meeting that evening. And I want to welcome Veronique Escalante, who's the current PTA Council president. They met this morning.
Good evening, everybody. So my name is Veronique Escalante. I want to report on our meeting this morning. One of the things that I really want to focus on this year, and I told the executive committee as well as the president of the PTA, is the communication and the focus on our role as being the conduit of communication between the administration and the parents. Laptop conversations,
what people are talking about. You want the people in that room, in this room actually, it's healthier, to be completely honest. And I think, you know, every time we're there, it does happen. But I want it to be a little, we're striving to focus on it a little more and to make sure that those lines of communication are completely open. So parent concerns, what parents think, good, bad, otherwise. And at the same time, you know, we would like the administration and whoever the board representative is to come with topics that you feel you need feedback on as well. So that it is a two-way street. That said, I will, as part of this too, I will not be the only one coming up here to do the board reports or the PTA council reports. We are changing it up a little bit this year, where either a PTA president from a local PTA president from one of the schools or one of the executive committee members can have the chance to present. Of course, if nobody is available or nobody wants to, then it's my job. one of the things that we talked about and are highlighting this year is one of our committees called ESSAC, which is the Student Services Advisory Council. It was formerly known as SERP, which was the Special Education Resource Committee, and then it changed into Special Education Parent Support Group. But I think in line with the changes in the district with Michelle Gallo and her title, the group had purposefully changed the direction, not the direction that they went, but they wanted to align with Michelle and work together with the district to achieve their goals. And one of the goals this year is, and the goals of this group are twofold, to educate parents, which is to invite speakers for people who, for the parents of the children who have any sort of special service needs. So it's not just the people who are on the spectrum or have physical disabilities, but anybody who may have maybe ADHD or something that is not, or even a kid that doesn't have an IEP, but a parent thinks there might be something going on with their kid, that's there to support those parents. And so, again, the goals are twofold, to educate parents with the speakers and maybe some doctors or some resources. They have a library that they have books on certain topics about. And then to support. So they have two meetings a month. And the support piece is like a safe haven for these parents to be able to come and to basically get input from other parents who have walked that road. And one of the goals this year is to spread awareness about this group. And also, one of the things that they've brought to the schools is awareness to the kids. They've been working with Michelle, and I think Ben Franklin had this last year, but when we met with Dr. Gordon and the committee chairs, the district basically said, if you're going to do this across all the elementary schools, the district should then fund this. You're still part of the organization and the support of SFN. The district will pay for it, so that's great, because and coordinating it too, because you're pulling kids out of class time. So that's the Woodstra Assembly for the third graders. And one of our goals as the PTA Council is to also ask all our PTA committee chairs to just the question, to ask the question of how can we make this activity accessible to kids with other needs. So that's one of the things that we're trying to make sure happens. We had other reports. We had community outreach, so an old staple. They're starting their collection drive for Christmas or holiday sharing. And STEAM is going to try to introduce a summer music camp. And that's in the works. We'll give you more updates on that. And now to the board, to the school report. And these are a mixed bag. Some kindergarten parents were dissatisfied with the distribution time for PE. And this was at Lincoln. At Ben Franklin, there were concerns about the A and B schedule and moving around the building. lugging around all their things. And these are, I understand these are building concerns, but I wanted to share with you because this is what was shared at the meeting. There was kudos overall, though, for the new grading system. A lot of people really took well to the fact that there's a little bit more clarity now, and you know, it's not just an M or an A or a P. There was some discussion surrounding Raptor. There were concerns that Churchill president brought up regarding the class parties and the chaos that would cause if it rained for the parade, especially the Halloween parade. Looping is working. And there were good, there was good feedback about looping. Forrest Glenn basically said that, their school is getting free T-shirts for each and every person, which is awesome. But there's some concern about the new license policy. It's potentially an issue that could be brewing. So. They wanted to bring that to the administration's attention. There was some dissatisfaction also voiced with the fact that Ben Franklin is the only school that piloted the Chromebook. They felt like Ben Franklin students get an edge over everybody else because they would be used to that technology. Hadley, Welcome to the Den was a success, and a concern that was brought up was that some parents with 504s and IEPs are concerned with the transition from elementary to middle school. And so that's something that I know was that Catherine was going to go and follow up on. So.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
And just to clarify, Raptor, for those who don't know what it is, it's the new entry system in our buildings and the requirement that you have to have a picture ID. That you then wear in a lanyard. Is that how we're doing it? Or
it prints out a badge.
Yeah,
sticker.
Or a sticker. I think Hadley has lanyards too. So just so that I clarify that. Thank you very much.
As long as we asked about that, mm-hmm. Dave's here. Dave, I had a situation brought to my attention. It was a 16-year-old that went to Lincoln. It happened to be a staff person, not related to me. Staff person. This child, young adult. Doesn't have a license or a state ID. Lincoln, they didn't let her in. Happened to be a staff person's daughter because she couldn't go through the Raptor system. Do we have any allowance for that? Or
you should be able to type in their social security number and see if that is a hit. But since they're a minor, it may not be in that report because they pretty much do until 18 and up. So. But you can still type in the social security number.
So
the question is, what accommodations might there be?
And one of the pieces that we're looking on from the policy standpoint is policy 850 on visitors into the buildings and ensuring that takes in that minor piece that Raptor does not. So policy 850 is the piece where we need to really look at and make sure that we have clarification there.
Okay, sounds good.
Thank you.
Okay. And in the meantime, didn't we communicate with us?
Yeah.
The building.
It's more,
of course. 18.
Yeah, it's for the Raptor, really is adults that we're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Construction?
Let's keep that open for the policy conversation. It's just for adults.
Well,
the system is set for 18 and older. That's what they will check for. But thanks for the clarification. That's what Raptor is. But the visitor policy will be for everybody, including minors.
Yep.
Is there a better way?
Sorry.
No. That I was wondering. Construction update, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Dave and Jack.
I'm going to start with the same thing. Phase 3 construction at Churchill is going very well. The footings have been poured, foundation walls, forms have been stripped. Insulation has been put on. They're going to start backfilling this week. Next week, the plumber will come in and rough in all the drains and piping underground, and then we'll start doing blocking there. So, Jack can focus on the other stuff.
That's the update. The other four schools are just closing out any punch list items. Most recently, is the work at Franklin and Churchill Phase 2. And then this last weekend we got the final phase of the Cubbies in at Lincoln from the Resource Center. So that's done. And we provided you an updated project schedule for Churchill Phase 3, mm-hmm. which weather dependent is showing completion around March 1st for occupancy, and then following on with site work and restoration through the spring. So we'll keep you updated on the schedule as the schedule goes forward and the weather dictates. Any questions?
Did you say that the cubbies were already installed?
Yeah, there is that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Great.
Thanks.
Good. Great. Thank you.
Joe? Just want to make sure. Didn't want to miss you. Community engagement. Eric will be presenting us with this year's community engagement plan. We've done a really nice job last year, and she continues, kind of that springboard into this year.
Well, it's hard to believe that it's been just 1 year since I was standing in front of you and kind of introducing myself to the community. And a lot has happened in that year. It's kind of incredible to think that that we've accomplished so much together. I really appreciate the support that the board has given to the community engagement program that we put together last year and the different communications that we've done throughout this past year, and patience with me as I was learning along the way. So a lot of acronyms and education. So I appreciate all of the patience, and along with the community, we were learning together, and I really appreciate that as well. I hope that this presentation gives you some insight on how we're going to be approaching continuing moving forward with the communications and the community engagement effort. As many of you know, before I arrived here last year, I worked in higher education for 15 years. And in higher ed, at the university level, when students come to you, they're either ready or they're not ready. It's been really a pleasure, and it's been enlightening to see kind of how that all starts. And it starts here, and it's powerful, and it feels heavy and big a lot of times. And so that's why I think that I learned from the community that there are a lot of questions of the board and of the schools, and we all need to work together in order to support learning in the classroom. And that was kind of my big takeaway this past year, is that we can't be a great school district without one another. And so we need to continue to work together, and that's really what I hope my role continues to be, working together with the community. So, thank you. So here's an overview of what I hope to share with you today, which is the community engagement. What is it? Let's just start from, everybody understands the definition of community engagement. That will highlight quickly what we accomplished last year in 14-15, and then I'll summarize what to expect this next year. So the Public Relations Society of America has a nice, very simple description of what community engagement is. And it's really all about adapting your communication to your community. So what I do in communications, public relations, community engagement, all of that is really not a science. It ebbs and flows with different communities. So this past year was really important for me to spend a lot of time sitting down over coffee, talking to people, listening, and learning about our communities so that we could then adapt our communication strategy and community engagement based on that. And that's how then we start to grow our engagement together, and we can together impact what happens in the classroom and support the district and relationship to our community. A little bit about the best practices in community engagement. According to the Public Relations Society of America, I have been a member of this organization for my entire career. It crosses fields of work, so education in general, but also hospitals. All of the public relations gods go to the Public Relations Society of America. And this is really, these 5 points are exactly what drive my thinking every single day. So I'm going to take a few moments on this slide, if you can kind of bear with me, to go through a little bit of a teaching moment in terms of what we need to do in terms of best practices for our district moving forward to be successful. So the first is that we do not wait to engage, which is why I'm glad that you brought me here, so we can continue to make these efforts together, and it enables us to be proactive. if we're not proactive, we cannot build the relationships. We can't think ahead to know, you know, if you know the community well, you're not able to be proactive without knowing your community. So sharing information early and often, that's really what number one is all about, and it is the most basic kind of PR communication 101. Is that we have to start engaging sooner rather than later and communicating early and often. Second is that we have to take a long-term view. Stakeholder engagement is not a one-and-done event. It is something that we need to employ a strategy of frequent engagement over the long term. So I've been here 1 year. That's not enough. We have to keep doing this forever. And that means that we need to establish and maintain good relationships, and that requires time. Just like in your own personal lives and your own work, at day to day, relationships take work and they take time, and they just don't happen overnight. And so the community can't get to know who the district is now without spending that time getting to know one another. Third is engage them with more than who you know. This seems simple, but yet it's actually fairly complicated because who knows you, who doesn't know you? There's a lot of different stakeholders connected to the district. But engagement should not just focus on the district relationships that we already have, and we shouldn't just only focus on the loudest voices. And that can be hard sometimes because we have a lot of passionate people and education, and this is another takeaway number two. Education is very personal at the elementary and middle school level. And I know as a parent of a 2- and a 5-year-old, my 5-year-old just went to kindergarten this year, and I'm getting into it too, right? So I want to know all of the things, but it is incredibly personal. It's important to define the criteria for identifying and prioritizing stakeholders and identifying the proper engagement tool for each group. So for example, if next year, you know, one of my recommendations that we focus on the D41 kind of stakeholder that doesn't necessarily have children in our school. So from what I hear, it's around 80%. I don't know the exact numbers. We need to think about how do we reach those people. And that particular group, it's not necessarily by electronic communication. They're not coming to us because they're not feeling that, you know, personal pull of education at the moment. So we need to really go out to them. And so that would be one strategy to engage someone, you know, a group that doesn't necessarily know us as we are today. And another example of this is something that we did last year, and I saw it as a strategy, but we kind of were just doing it, which is with the implementation of problem-based learning, reaching out to the organizations that are partnering with us through that effort. We've made wonderful connections with organizations, leaders in the community. They are directly impacting learning in the classroom and beyond the classroom by serving as experts for us. So that is kind of exactly what this is, engage more than who you know. It's really proactively going out and doing that. Four, listening is the most important part of engagement. And again, all of this sounds really simple, but it's complicated because people are complicated. But engagement requires both parties' attention and participation. So that means the district and the community. Monitoring, measuring, and proactively listening allows an organization to gain unique insight into stakeholders. We really need to know one another. If we're listening well, we'll be able to look ahead, and then we'll be able to give the information that we know our community, our friends, the people we built relations, we'll know what they need to, what they want ahead of time. We can look ahead. And so I think that's something I personally, you know, as I'm here longer, will continue to work on, is just listening and getting to know everyone and all the communities that we serve. We serve 5 communities. That's another topic I could go on. So fifth, it's not about us. Not about the district, it's about the community. And engagement should focus on what the community needs, what the stakeholders need, what's important, what they need, what's important to them, and why should they participate in this relationship? Why should they care about the district? While many understand the value of customized communications for stakeholders, the need to customize, like I kind of shared before about, you know, different community groups or members will need us to communicate in different ways. There's a different mix of how to communicate that we need to pay attention to and customize our communications, because it's not about the message we want to push out. It's about what everyone kind of in their different places in the community what they need to know and why they need to know it in the community. So kind of goes back to that, you're adapting your community, the definition earlier, you're adapting the communications to your community, and then you'll be able to grow together. I love that. I kind of see the spring and the flowers that we're growing. So that's kind of my the best practices piece. So as I go through what we're doing, I hope, and it's my intention that you'll see all this play out and what we're doing. So so let me quickly highlight the 2014-15 year. We strengthened the basics that we were already doing. That was pretty much my strategy in doing a lot of listening. So we had new engagement opportunities, and we had additional communication tools, like, you know, we started doing a weekly district digest to like 6,000 people, the annual report, the social media, all that. We just were adding some new communications, new engagement. And then it was my intention to enhance our media relations, building relationships in order with reporters, who are also another part of our community, because it's really important for communities to tell their story, not just our district, but that we also celebrate those stories with the community, and that also helps people come together. You know, they sit and they break bread together and they celebrate, and that's kind of why, the Daily Herald, you can chime in, but that's why there needs to be a balance between hard news and stories and all of that. It's all the whole package together. So media relations is kind of my first love. I started as a director of media relations, and I love working with the media. I think anyone who kind of goes into this field thinks about being a journalist, you know, or were journalists at one point. So that telling our story piece, we also need to continue doing, and both the hard news, but also taking that time to celebrate. And we're really lucky that we do have media outlets here that are paying attention to us. So it's a benefit, although sometimes it can be a challenge. The goal for 15-16, as I talk about strategy, I hope that all of this is going to go back to that definition, but that my hope for the district is that we deepen the trust with the community members and leaders who live within the District 41 boundaries through comprehensive communications and meaningful connections. And the reason I can specify that within our boundaries is because we need to have some focus, because we can go even further, and we can talk about legislators, which would be government relations person. There's so much and so many meaningful connections that could be made. Right now, I think that if we just focus on the five communities and the boundaries, that is a place that makes sense to start. Okay, strategy. So we will continue to enhance communications by looking ahead and communicating early, which I mentioned before. We will look out into the community and connect with people that don't necessarily already know us. So last year, I felt like there was a lot of, you know, I was asking people to come in. We had the state of the district that, you know, come to us. This year, we need to go out. We did some listening, and we did some going out with the board coffee and conversations was a piece of that. But you'll see that we will be creating more opportunities for the district to be out and participating in the community. And that telling our story piece, I just share that we have a celebration, and you'll probably hear this at the board level another time, but that one of our Hadley students was selected to be a Time for Kids reporter with Time Magazine. And he's getting wonderful celebrations. We had a photographer at Hadley today. He's not only celebrating in his home, but in his classroom, and now with the community. And it's just it's one of those pieces I just wanted to share. If you didn't know, we now have a Time Magazine reporter in our student body. That's pretty cool. So this is some just a few action steps to include on our journey getting to where we need to go. I have a whole plan. It's just a little sample. And I'll share the plan with you at another time if you haven't already seen it. The first piece here on this list is that I am thrilled to say that we are working to redevelop the district website, including the district and each school website. It's a labor of love. I think that this is one of our number, well, I would say it is our number one communication tool with parents and the community at large. It is not right now responsive to mobile devices, but we, and I know from listening, our parents are on the go. They want to just check things out. Is school closed? Is it open? They shouldn't have to go to emergencyclosings.com. They should just be able to be on our district website and know what they need to do. So I'm hoping that through working with the schools, speaking of PTA Council, I asked them today if they would test, a parent test for us, a user experience, and let us know. Try to break it. Let me know if the navigation makes sense. So we'll be doing some of those, kind of taking the show on the road with the new website. But easy navigation, responsive design, it is an absolute must for sharing information with people. This is a recommendation, costs money, but I would love to convince you on the fact that the district should be spending some investment on print mailing to all of the residents within our district. Many school districts do it. I don't think we should do it all the time. I don't think we should be sending letters just on one specific topic. But there's kind of two options. We could send out the annual report, which, you know, I know the board knows, but we did an annual report this year. We kind of did a limited printing and just tried to get it out electronically. I don't think it had the reach that it could have had if we mailed it home and it kind of became a tabletop book that people could review. But I also don't think that's enough. I think we need to do it at least twice a year. I would love to do it quarterly, but I'm not going to go there. I think that it is one of the only ways that we could reach our general district community beyond knocking on doors. And I can't knock on every door. It's just not possible. I won't be able to do anything else. So that's a recommendation there. The Community Facilities Task Force is... I can't say enough good things about it. We're going to kind of stumble along as we go with it, but the fact that, and I shared this with PTA Council this morning, that we have just opened it up and said, anyone who wants to check out our facilities, walk our halls, analyze what's going on, share your views on our school facilities, start work with us to understand the history. We have 36 people that have just said, yes, I want to do that, and it takes a lot of time. So that says to me that we have parent and community involvement, and we're in a good place. Anywhere else, I would have feared that we would have had three people show up. And I just think that's a fantastic community outreach piece. This is just goes, bullet four goes to taking our message out. One of my recommendations this year is to not do a State of the District, just come to us in a big auditorium. Thought it was nice last year. We had some community leaders, some teachers, but it was minimal. I think that we need to take the show on the road and go to various communities and really talk to people and have a conversation instead of just a presentation. I think that's kind of the next step for year two. And I know that the administration agrees that I would like to see us participating in the community more. We kind of tested this out at the backyard barbecue in Glen Allen, and thanks to Kirk and Jill for being the dunk tank and bringing all the families out. But in order for us to be listening and to participate, if we want others to work with us and be a partner with us, then we need to sit at the board table, but we also need to sit at the picnic table and have those conversations and get to know one another. Finally, the board hosted coffees with the superintendent. So we had last year tried out the coffee and conversations piece at Glen Oak, and it was great. I mean, we had anywhere from 3 to 7-ish, and just from memory, people come at a time, and there were some really good questions and conversations there. I would like to see us take that even a step further this year and work with each one of you to connect with a community member that could host a coffee, whether it be at a local dive or restaurant or in a home, and invite their neighbors and friends. And so that's each one of you would have the opportunity to connect with a community member, bring some people together, and have us just sit down and talk. And I think that way we can get, again, going out, kind of the theme this year, and making those connections, and we really need the board's help in doing that. Finally,
So the outcome of all of this is the National School Public Relations Association, PR, just for school district, and they have an official public relations definition, and I just underlined exactly what I think we're here to do, which is improve the programs and services of an educational organization. We cannot do it alone. That's why these connections are so vitally important. But the goal is stimulating a better understanding of the role, the objectives, the accomplishments, and the needs of our district. And so both of those things coming together, if that happens, then as we move forward, it is happening. If we keep deepening those relationships, there'll always be a need because as the organization mm-hmm. changes, you'll continue to need to get to know the organization as we move forward together. So, and I think that's it. And then just my contact information, the social media, connect with us. Feel free to reach out to me. Email is sometimes the best way because I can see that, and I always have email on my phone, and I try to be as responsive as possible. Any questions?
I had just a thought. Well, first of all, I'd like to say most of the people I interact with have a very favorable impression of you. So that's a good thing. So that's kind of the face of the district that's going to do that. So I appreciate that. And, you know, you indicated we need to tell the story, but yet we don't want to really be pushing out too much information. And so for me, one of the things that I'd like to make sure that we're just cautious about is when we put out a feel-good story, we really should just put out all stories, whether they're good or bad to the district. When we talk about transparency, it's not all perfect, but that's just life. So when we push out on the D41 Facebook page, we need to probably put out, if the district's putting out information, we should be putting out all stories, you know, not just maybe good stories, stories that maybe don't show good things. That would be my, I think that would go a long way to people to say, hey, they're just putting stuff out. You know, so.
Thanks.
Yeah, Eric, you asked about the thought of publishing twice a year at the mm-hmm. newsletter. But do you not have a budget?
I do. Yes, I definitely have the budget to cover it because I plan for something like this. This year I was trying to decide between the annual report being kind of just the one push out or two. I think I'm landing on it's more important to communicate often and maybe do the, you know, maybe I'll have enough for three. It just all depends. I need to work with our graphics person on that or our printing company and mailing costs. It's the mailing cost that is the big factor. I mean, just to mail a postcard is almost $2,000 to our district community. So that's what we're weighing that. But I'm comfortable with the budget. I think we can do everything I've presented here within the budget that I've been allowed. And if there's some left over, I won't be tempted to just continue.
So it's a thought that, I mean, mm-hmm. if you have the ability to do it, it's how mm-hmm. you do it, right?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
It's going to be the best approach.
This is a change, though, because there have been times, from my understanding, the back some years that when the district did cut some funds, they used to do more communicating in a variety of ways. And I just really feel like we should never have stopped doing that. Mm-hmm. And it kind of set us back a little bit. But it was budgetary, right? I understand that everyone had to make sacrifices and cuts. I think that we can do it a way where we're not overly mailing, but that we're doing it in a strategic, kind of appropriate way for where we're at financially. Mm-hmm. And I can do that with my budget.
I have a question about pushing out.
Mm-hmm.
How will we get the groups we should go to? Because, you know, I saw that there's things like Rotary Chamber, but I think there's a lot of other really good groups that meet in Glen Ellyn with a lot of people involved in them. And do we have a way to catalog those? Or what should we do as board members as we come across those? What do you want us to do?
It would be great if you sent me some ideas and list of names. You know, I'm mostly just listening and getting the landscape to see kind of where there's a mix of people in the community participating. And so that's how I kind of came up with that, was just the fast list. But I know newcomers, Rotary, Chamber, these are places that the person that was in my position before had connected with. And so we'll continue to make those connections. And then as there are new entities or organizations that would make sense, I would love to hear them, because I didn't know about the backyard barbecue in terms of like how effective that would be. It was a little bit of a, you know, let's just see. I think it was a success. I think we connected with some people there. The weather was not great. I think it was better. We were
very wet.
So yeah. There for I don't know how many hours, but thankfully we had tents. but I think it's important to show up and to participate, and so one of the things I think about a lot is how to engage not just the Glen Ellyn community, because we do serve other communities, and a lot of their students, I was asking the registrar, you know, how many students are from Wheaton? How many students, so what's the next largest, you know, group community yeah. that we serve, and how can we connect with it? Glendale Heights Summerfest, is it going to their, you know, village meetings to connect with them? So those are the pieces that I think through, but I welcome all input.
Okay.
I think one of the other observations, and just to pick up on Dean real quick, is that so I live in Wheaton, but I'm in Glen Ellyn School District and Park District with Wheaton Library and City Chamber, City Council. So, you know, we have some people who are living in different parts. And so I do get the Wheaton 200 twice a year, I think she puts it out, a newsletter. And so for those of us who live in, you know, kind of multiple districts, you do see what's going on in the other ones. I know I always bring that in to show you. And
I'm happy to take examples. And
yeah, so I think that's helpful. But mm-hmm. And the other thing I would say is, I would agree with you. I think last year was kind of a trial to do the coffee and conversations with the board. We tried to find a way to do it that was in some way similar to maybe the coffee with a cop. That was a little bit of the thought behind it, but it's not a, when we did it, I know that Patrick and I did it wasn't so much about quantity, but to the presence and pushing out and doing those things. So I want to encourage the board to, you know, to do that again. I see you still have it on there, so
yes.
We'll have to get those scheduled. And so
I think it's great, and actually the more you repeat those things,
right,
they'll, you know, and I would actually encourage you not to necessarily change the location all the time,
right,
because as you do them, people will know, oh, they're always there on the whatever Thursday or Saturday of the month, right. That's the D41 kind of spot. You know,
yeah.
So it kind of creates a tradition,
mm-hmm.
which I think would be really nice for the board to do.
Yeah.
I was going to add, to kind of echo what Kurt had said, that I think, you know, to share the celebration is great. But I also think that we somehow need to figure out a way to get information out there about decisions that are happening maybe within the board. Just, I know we used to have...
Board highlights.
And we've gotten away from that, and I have had some people tell me, you know, we don't really know what's going on. All we get are the happy emails from the district, and they really don't, you know, they don't differentiate like a board highlight from the district digest. Like in their mind, it's all emails coming from the district. And so I have heard feedback that people just feel disconnected. There's not really information going out there as far as just basic decisions that we're making. So I think I don't know the best way to do that, but I do think we need to try to find a balance to just share information, not just the celebrations. Mm-hmm. And I think it's great that the website's being updated, because that is definitely not 21st century our website. So thank you for that. The other two other points as far as, you know, sitting at the picnic table and getting feedback, I think there's going to be some organized events to maybe do that. I think a lot of us do that already. I mean, I stand up front of the elementary school twice a day, and constantly people are talking to me and I'm hearing different things. So I'm wondering, we all have different lenses and are going to pull different things from those conversations, but if there's going to be a way to capture that information, I don't know, just something to think about, how to capture some feedback that we're hearing from picnic table type conversations. Mm-hmm. And then last thing, as far as events, which I think it's good to attend events, but I do want to just be a little conservative with that too, because I worry that the community could think, well, wait, we're spending our tax money to pay to attend these events. So I think we just need to be mindful of that and understand that
balance.
Good or bad, but just to make sure we have a balance.
supplies.
Mm-hmm. I like the idea of having us seek out in our neighborhoods or whatever it might be opportunities to bring the superintendent and you to the table. And it speaks to, and I know we hear that a lot from community members, that percentage that had children come through or and no longer have them here, maybe were former teachers in the district and, you know, want to still encourage that conversation. So I don't know, I have a feeling that we'll be able to give a lot of names, and they'll be busy, Paul. There you go.
I was thinking like one or
yes, just one. Yeah, just one. But we'll all have one at least. Yeah. Good. Thank you. Happy anniversary.
Oh, thank you.
All right. Thank you, Erica. Under discussion items, we have survey framework. This was just to give some context. I'm gonna at our last board meeting, which was actually I think like 3 weeks ago because we had an extra week, so it feels like forever ago. There was a discussion and then an invitation from Patrick actually to Stephanie and to Kurt, and the board gave consensus to have them do some work around a framework to identify areas, issues, things that are important in terms of survey, knowing that we have a plan for the survey to be rolled out in October. And so we were going to plan to come back and hear what some of those ideas are.
Okay. I put together a little document that's very like unofficial, but just to catch my
thank body. You.
And I know I sent it to Mike. He can throw it up if you want for everyone out there to see. Maybe just could you zoom in on just like the top part, Mike, and then I can maybe scroll down to the bottom in a second. But basically, Kurt and I were talking, trying to figure out a framework to come up with for how the district is going to conduct surveys. We weren't able to speak with school perceptions, which I think we decided at the last meeting that we wanted to move forward with them as a survey company. That was the board had kind of consensed that, but we weren't able to speak with them. Apparently, they don't speak with individual board members, I guess is the reasoning we were given. So we did some of our own research, looked at a lot of companies online, reached out to some companies to try to come up with kind of a framework of how surveys at schools are conducted. I highlighted there at the top some our basic research that we found is that October through April is best for parent, faculty, and student surveys, although holidays and times of stress should be avoided. Satisfaction tends to be highest in October and November. Many schools conduct surveys 2 to 3 times per year for comparison purposes since morale changes throughout the year. Constituent satisfaction surveys are typically conducted once per year or every other year to track progress over time. The important thing to note here is for the most reliable comparisons, repeat surveys should be conducted at the same time of year, every year. Research shows that survey participants tend to give more direct and honest feedback when they are assured that their identities will be kept confidential. And distributing surveys electronically is most efficient. In addition to being slow and very costly, the response rate to snail mail is usually low to provide reliable data, and due to the prevalence of caller ID and call blocking, telephone surveys have become far less effective. So electronic surveys are fast and expensive and generally produce satisfactory response rates. So that was kind of our research. Then if we scroll down to it's very kind of simple framework because we didn't have a lot of information to go on right now, but what we were recommending is that the district needs to be conducting 3 types of surveys. The first one is the staff culture and climate, which Dr. Gordon and Lori Campbell have already come up with that, and they've already have a plan in place for that one. The second one is a teacher, parent, student satisfaction survey, and the third would be a community survey. The difference between the teacher, parent, and student satisfaction survey and the community survey would be the one would kind of be more what's going on in the schools, and then the last one would include parents who have students in the school, but more in general, the community, how the community is impacted, you know, probably more from a financial standpoint, decisions we need to make moving forward. We feel that we should be conducting all of these surveys yearly. our recommended timeline for the staff culture and climate survey is in the fall. I know that's the plan right now to conduct that one in the fall. And then a teacher, parent, student satisfaction survey, which would include evaluating our programs, to be done in the early February to early March time frame in order to have the results before spring break. Kind of our logic here is that's when we did it in 2014, so we'd be serving at the same time of the year as we have in the past to have reliable data. And
our research, I mean, we didn't even talk to that, but our research as we did it showed for the reliable data.
Yeah.
Yep.
To do
keep it
in the
time
pipe in.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also felt if we, by doing it early enough in the spring time frame, it gives us time to impact decisions for the fall for staffing or staffing or whatever would occur for the fall time frame. And then the community survey, which would be all of D41 taxpaying residents, we suggested that April with the results back in mid-May. Anything to add to that, Kurt?
So that one where we have to go back to mail because we wouldn't have email contact.
Well, here that. So here's what we have. For the survey format, we said that all surveys should be electronic and completely anonymous. We could make arrangements at the CSO or school libraries for parents or community members to take the survey if they don't have access to a computer. And then the community should have the option to contact the school district for a paper survey. So we were thinking, I mean, I don't know for the community if there could be like a postcard or a mailer, if we could tie it into something. I think it's going to just be very costly to mail it to the whole community, but if we could somehow, those are details we didn't quite figure out.
Well,
how
one
to,
of the
how
things is, as Erica was talking about.
Right.
Because that seems to be a challenge to get to those people.
If you could link it into link it into one of the two reports, that would probably make sense to put it in there. And then also you could give the option if there's community members who do not use computers at all to get them a paper survey. But I think just from a cost standpoint, I think a lot of the community that is electronic, and if we're going to already mail some sort of paper communication, we could put the information there to cut down on cost.
One of the benefits as we do these things will then, you know, certainly if the community doesn't want to get emails blasted from us, they could take themselves off the list unless they just wanted to be on the survey list. But we would be capturing more and more email addresses where we could, you know, we could push information out and connect with them that way. So
the survey content, we felt that the board should discuss direction on what types of things the board would be looking for. Especially with like the 21st century initiatives, since the board voted on that, we should be involved in the evaluation process. And then my last point, this really isn't a survey, but it kind of ties into it, was that I didn't want to lose this thought that, you know, maybe we want to create a timeline to have a company such as Advantage Analytics, who they did, I think it was 11, 12, and 12, 13 did benchmark studies for us, and they can maybe benchmark five essential survey data as well as test scores to just see how we're doing in comparison to other districts, because our surveys are going to look at how we feel as a whole in our community, but if we want to see how we're doing comparatively, you know, maybe this is something we want to do every year or every other year to get a timeline in place for that, because I think it's all part of, you know, getting to do that. We haven't done it in a couple of years.
Thank you. Anything you want to add to that I missed?
Well, I mean, you had the other notes section. Is that in that?
No, they don't have that.
Okay. So one of the things that we talked about was, you know, when we were looking through this, you know, we noticed UNICOM, our school perceptions is one. Some of these companies, they aren't, when you look at their websites, they're not just survey companies. I mean, some of these companies are, I mean, they're for PR firms, you know. So are we paying a premium because maybe we're using a school perceptions that does some of that versus just a straight-out survey company? And what's the perception from the community then if we're using some of these organizations you know, so that was something we thought maybe we should just be mindful of going forward as to who we're utilizing for these surveys, you know, so, because there are straight survey companies out there as far as that goes, so. And then I think Steph touched on, you touched on the rest of the.
When you guys did your research, did you guys take cost into consideration and cost, budget costs for these surveys?
Mm-hmm. Oh, we brought the template. I mean, that was part of one of the, if you wanted more detailed information, then maybe we should have thought the school perceptions and had some access to them. So.
Just a question, yes or no, it's cool.
That's why I'm going to answer it the way that I'm going to answer it. I don't need to answer it yes or no. If you ask the question, I'm answering it. No, we were not allowed access to school perceptions. Had we had access to them, that's something that we could probably add it in here.
As reference, what did we pay for the school perception survey?
I think it was $8,500, somewhere in that ballpark.
Okay. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Is that going to run for this October one?
Currently, it's going to be significant less because it's not that.
$2,000. I thought it was like $2,000.
Yeah, because it's already established.
Since Sarah did it.
They created the original survey.
Yeah.
Somewhere in that ballpark.
But you know, that is if they did the exact same survey. If you start adding questions.
Yeah, that's a pretty.
Which I think was some of the discussion with things right or wrong and different, but yeah. That would increase the man hours.
And another thing you get is out of the box, it's going to be high cost, and then repeating is going to be.
The high cost is your time with the individual talking through each of the questions, where are we at, ensuring that we're getting those right questions.
Mm-hmm. And I do think, I know school perceptions in their original recommendation that they gave us that there should be like master questions for the surveys. And then,
when you say master questions, like those national?
Those always stay on the survey.
Yeah.
They always stay
okay.
on there.
Just aware.
But then I do think that, this is part of the survey content. I didn't know how detailed you wanted us to get, but I think for the survey content for, I think there are, as we're changing and adjusting and doing different things within our schools, I think we do have to account in budget to add questions to the survey because, the whole purpose of it is to get feedback on what's going on in the schools, and so I think you would have some set questions that would always stay the same, but then there's going to be a portion that you're going to either maybe remove or add, and I can get detailed about that, what that should be, but I do think that would be important to just adjust because, year to year things change, and to do the same survey year to year where everything is exactly the same doesn't make much sense to me if we're changing what we're doing in schools.
And that was a conversation we had early on with school perception based off of the feedback from the board was, what would it look like if we added additional questions? And those are pieces that we would add to them. We would do what you say, you have that kind of that set master list, but there is that opportunity to continue adding to it. You won't have that longitudinal, obviously, until you re-ask those questions. Sorry, Joe.
Yeah, just one other question. In your research, you pointed out that certain firms come with certain backgrounds and so forth and so on. Now, when you research these different companies, a peer survey company, do they have the national data that a school perception has to you so you can look at comparative data?
Yes.
Good.
Yeah, I think that was one of the, to your point, Stephanie, and just this idea of the master list. I remember when Bill Foster presented the data, the whole purpose, and I know I've said this, so I'll repeat it, that the district got out of the habit, similar to what Erica was saying earlier about there being some costs associated, some changes in budgeting, and so we didn't do the survey. We came in-house with it, which was a mistake because you don't have the longitudinal data, and so school perceptions provides that and does that national norming. So that's important to have. In addition to the other thing that I know he was in the proposal but also talked about, and that is the way that the content or the questions are written, you're focusing on outcomes. So you could ask a straightforward question like, do you like X? But what we're looking for is data that's going to say, well, what's the outcome that we're trying to achieve? What's the activity, the action, the thing to do or not to do anymore? And so then the way the questions are framed is less about, you know, I like it, I don't like it, and more about, is this moving us in that direction? So that additional content, to your point, will be framed their language in order to get to outcome, because that's the goal of a survey, is what's that next step or adjustment to be made.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing I have about National Morning, which I don't know if we need to talk to school perceptions, but if I recall correctly, and I don't have the survey results in front of me, I pull them up. But did they compare us? I don't think he compared us to other districts. I think he just said, oh, the average is kind of like, oh, you got a 4.5, the average is about 5. So I don't know that they, did they compare us to other districts? I remember Advantage Analytics did. And we had like a set list of districts that we wanted to compare to.
Well, those were that ones that we chose.
Right.
That the district chose.
But I don't
yeah.
know school perceptions of their results.
They have that national piece, but they don't say, you know, these are the 32.
Right.
These are the, I think they have a database for first year survey school districts, because it was important to do first year school surveys.
Mm-hmm.
And it was somewhere in that 600-700. But I can get those for you.
Because I guess I'm wondering, I just want to make sure if we're going to compare ourselves to other districts with the data, that it's other districts that, you know, is it nationally or
yeah.
is it more one?
Their perspective was nationally.
Because I don't know if that's as valuable as looking more locally, like we did with the benchmark study.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Just that's just my opinion. Mm-hmm.
I think
sometimes
it's a selection of the vendor.
Right.
I mean, you want to make sure they have the ability to slice and dice.
Big enough to be able to go national and right. local.
Because part of the national, the discussion that we had, I think, around national was looking at the adoption of national standards and those type of things. So how is the district aligned to that? And so that was a common piece to it. So. But your point about Advantage Analytics, when they updated in 2012, it was still based on those 30-plus districts. And we all talked about this as well, so I think it's important to have school perceptions, again, as the vendor, you know, and or Advantage Analytics look at that to say, you know, comparing ourselves to a unit district, right, like 200, which is pre-K through 12, what's the value of that, you know?
Well, and I guess, you know, maybe we need to have a discussion, but in my mind, there's two different things. You need to do a survey. We need to have a survey and data year to year just within our district to see how things are going. But then we're also looking to compare ourselves to other districts. But I don't know that the survey has to be used to do that. I mean, that could actually be a separate study. I mean, everyone in, I guess it's Illinois, has to take the 5 essentials. I mean, Do you want to, maybe if you're going to compare us to other districts, do you use that type of survey? And is this more just an in-house survey to see how we're doing? I mean, just I don't know that it's mutually exclusive that our survey has to also be what we use to compare ourselves to other districts. Or is it more going to be for use internally for us to measure, you know, how we're doing internally?
Yeah.
But we also need to have measures. And maybe it is.
And that was the advent of the analytics piece, is to be able to look at that. Because the Advanced Analytics also did something that we hadn't done as a district, and that was to look at the cost per pupil and the value of the education per that. And that was a very discrete a set of analytics that his company does. It's unique. And so did that and got some good. That was that one scattergram that kind of showed where we were, and also in terms of special needs education and all those pieces. So it was really very specific to us. 5 essentials, Erica, can you remind us? That's people can take it or not. I mean, it's not required. But if we don't hit a certain percentage,
then you don't get a report from the state.
Right. So that's part of the problem with that. It's not a given that we're going to get that feedback.
It's not a given that every... Just as for a comparable, not every district around us has to take it.
Right.
Each year you can opt out to use, you know, I think the state gives you three or four different options to use in place of it, just so.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like some of this is you've reinforced, which is, again, the staff culture and climate already in place. I think this, it sounds like what Paul can do in going back to talk to school perceptions in Bill Foster is this differentiation that you've talked about in terms of teacher, parent, student satisfaction and then community survey.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. Are we saying like culture and climate and then the teacher, parent is kind of like scholastic and programs and the community survey is more financial? Or are we kind of
financial, but also overlay,
yeah. You know, dovetail the three together as it goes through with similar questions?
Some of it may overlay, but you had a pretty long
I think the community survey too is also, and Erica spoke about this in her presentation a little bit, is it's that sense of that community partnership, that the role of education and schools in terms of how you feel about that. That's a fuzzy word, but you know that some of what the survey can get at is, you know, that sense of you know, partnership with the schools, and that schools as a part of the fabric, how does it impact us in that as well? So so it sounds like that is a piece of the conversation that's a little bit different to have with them as well. Do other people think? Joe, any other thoughts on that?
I think the main thing I see from this framework is it's a consistent message that Stephanie had of moving the teacher, parent, student satisfaction survey February, March, but the spring.
Right. And I think wrote a question about that.
Yeah, that's the main thing I see here. And if that's the feedback you get, that's best for the school perceptions. And I'm making an assumption here that we're using school perceptions because we did last time.
Mm-hmm. That's
the. That's an assumption. There was some rhetoric that may not be the case. And framework you guys were setting, so clarification on that is probably good. But I mean, if the feedback's consistent from school perceptions, then
I guess the question I would have of you and your administration and then with the vendor as you do this kind of administrative work is it doable meaning can you capture, do the assessment, capture that, and then take that data and then turn it back over to the principals and the planning to say, now, develop your school improvement plans, those SIP plans, those type of things. Is that time frame doable? That's a big question.
With the teacher, parent, student, the SIPs, we have to turn those plans into the state much sooner than that. So take the SIP plan piece out of that.
Mm-hmm.
The culture, climate, those pieces aren't going to impact that, and nor were they ever intended to. So is it doable? It is absolutely doable. I mean, let me know.
Is that one of your, that teacher, parent, student, scholastic, I'm calling it scholastic survey, is your out-of-the-box goal or your goal to say use that survey to help drive fall scholastic changes?
That's my question.
Okay.
You don't have to answer that now, but the rhetorical question is to be answered. Is it doable to do a survey in that time frame and expect that coming back from spring break, knowing that there's X amount of weeks left at the end of the year to finish school and at the same time be then developing plans, is that doable with that data? That's the question.
It'd be tight because one of those big timelines is in around April in staffing and ensuring that our buildings are staffed appropriately. That's the biggest issue there.
So are we asking? I don't know. You have to answer it right this moment.
Yeah.
I'm just telling you that's a consideration we always have. Our staffing implications.
To me, I would think you'd take this back.
That's a question I'd like to see.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
and I think the logic for that is, that was the time frame that was done prior. but also that, you know, if you're looking to get the data to determine what you're doing, I think having more of the school year under your belt makes it more effective. If we're already going to be surveying the staff in October, you know, wait a little bit, get a couple more months. And in my mind, October, it's just the beginning of the year, and I don't know if everyone really has is even experienced everything that's happening in schools at that point, and they may not have even done a TBL yet or whatever. So I do think that it's important to push out the timing as far as possible to be able to make adjustments. You know, I don't know if that's January. I think probably December is probably a horrible time to do it, but maybe it's more January. But I think the logic for that was just the importance of getting more of this.
Okay. Yeah, it makes sense. I think we'll talk question about it. Is, you know, how does that, is that real, how is it done realistically then to be able to use it? Because that's the goal, right?
I know that the recommendation originally was 18 months, but, you know, from everything that, all the research that I did said, if you're doing a survey and you want reliable data to compare to and see how you're growing and how things are doing, that you need to do it at the same time every year, not
every other year.
Year. I mean, I think right now, since we have so much going on and so many initiatives we're looking at with facilities and things like that, that's why we said for all of these it should be every year. You know, maybe that changes down the road, but I think right now we have so much going on. I think there's the only real way to get some data is to just do it every year. It's not, once we get it set, it's not like the expense is that much. And you know, we just heard the presentation from Erica about community engagement, and in my mind, this is an important
this is a part
piece
of it,
community
sure.
engagement. Mm-hmm. So I think it's
well, and we're into a second and third year of some of the curriculum. So it's embedding, it's that kind of deepening now. So, you know, part of the decision making around this is that we're going to be surveying something that's in place, but best time is the question.
So, could I recommend that we staff bring this back?
Mm-hmm.
We'd bring to the next board meeting based off of the timeline that you guys are suggesting. And then we would lay those pieces out, and then we would also lay out kind of the broad picture, the types of questions in those pieces. Is that?
And Paul, did you? I'm sure you interviewed a couple more besides school perception when you did the first one.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any way that you can dust off those notes to say maybe this would be a good one because they're heavy financial or something.
The other companies?
Yeah.
That do surveys?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I don't know if it would be relevant or you just the, from a time.
Only one I would.
Maybe one of the other surveys?
Yeah, that would be the only piece that I would do it for. I think we need to stick with school.
Definitely for the other.
I'm calling the teacher-parent one the school perception survey.
Right.
We would leave that. We have the staff culture one through HumanX. It would be venturing into maybe a different group. With this community survey or dusting off and looking at those.
I think I'm not sure Kurt suggested this, but his point, I took what he meant was go with somebody without, you know, any, a pure survey company.
Okay.
You know, for the community survey, it makes sense.
Well, that's good perception, isn't it?
I'll look into that. Does that bring that back to the board in 2 weeks?
Yeah, on the 28th, next month.
Okay. Thank you.
You, Stephanie, and thank you, Kurt, very much. Great food for thought. All right. Board policy revisions.
Switch to that. Policy committee met, can't even remember, was it two weeks ago? 2 weeks ago. I know, it's all kind of coming together. We brought to them a number of policies.
Can you also remind who's on the policy committee?
Dean and Stephanie, myself, and Nancy is our recording secretary there as well, and mass organizer of all this information because it is an incredible amount of information that we go through. As you can see in your board packet, there are a number of changes that are made, but many of them are legislative changes, legal changes within the footnotes. So some pretty... some of the more nuanced changes that occurred within many of these policies.
Before the board meeting, I had a board member ask me about 250 in particular.
Oh, yes.
Because there's a lot of rewrite there.
Mm-hmm.
Something to understand is all of those red lines in here, Stephanie and myself and Paul didn't create any of those.
Right.
Those were all good. From... Well, I just want you to know, it isn't like we went through and decided how we were going to do FOIA. These are all law changes. And all of this is reflected in here through the ISB's recommendations. So yeah. We haven't made any changes to 250 other than what has been recommended. And then also, do we want to talk about 4110?
Can I ask a quick question?
Yep.
Who is our FOIA district?
Our officers, our chief communications officer, and Ms. Carolyn Gus back there.
And Stephanie asked that same question in the policy committee. And you said, who are those people? So yeah, it is referenced in there. So.
You're welcome. Which one did you want to highlight? Oh,
4110, because I think we want to see if we can move on that one.
Yes.
That one is under
Yeah, we're going to move that one to action. We have one policy that we'd like to move to action because it's impacting parents and community members now.
Right, and so we can... It was self-explanatory what the policy is in there. We wanted to see if we could move on that tonight, mm-hmm. so that we could go ahead and start to consider those requests mm-hmm. earlier rather than later.
Can you give just to highlight for the record? This is under operational services, so it's policy 4.110 transportation.
I will do my best at this, mm-hmm. but what it is that we have we go through a very long process to. Figure out what the bus routes and stops are going to be for all the kids. And there are requirements that are mandated to us for who we have to provide transportation to. So the first thing is putting together that whole route schedule. So we do that. And then at times, people will live a little closer than what that limit is. So let's say the limit, I believe it's a mile and a half.
Yes.
So let's say you live a mile and three tenths. But you may want to still see if you could get your child on a bus rather than having them walk the mile and three tenths. This policy, we had a policy in place before that allows us to consider that and charge you for that if you want to do it, and we have the space. There's a couple of caveats. One is we have to have the space on the bus. We're not going to add any stops to do that. You know, you have to fit into the schedule the way it is. The wording of it, though, was that I think it was over a mile.
1 mile.
Mm-hmm. 1 mile. So if you were 9/10 of a mile, you couldn't ask for an exemption. But if you were 1.1 miles, you could. So we thought maybe we should take that out because there are some concerns that people have where they would maybe want their child to ride a bus. Maybe it's after school to get to where they're going to go for daycare. So even though they live close, they'd be willing to pay for transportation to allow their child to ride a bus after school. So what we're saying is the mile was sort of arbitrary and just in the policy. We'd like to take the mile out and say that the administration should consider anybody's request. That doesn't mean they can grant them, but we should consider anybody's request and not just not consider it because, oh, geez, you live 0.99 miles away.
But who then, what is the cost of that? Who, the parent or guardian still?
The parent will pay for that. Mm-hmm. If we elect to... If the administration, the board doesn't do this, if the administration elects to include that student in a route, then there'll be a calculation for how much that parent would have mm-hmm. to pay to include their student in that route.
Mm-hmm. And key piece, I apologize, Stephanie, go
ahead. Oh, no, I was just going to say, and it has to be an existing route.
Thank you.
Right, it's just something, yeah. Please drive by my house.
If they live like 2/10 a mile from school, they're probably not going to want to do this because they're going to have to walk farther to the bus stop.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah.
To school.
How often does the district get requests for this?
Carolyn would be, yeah, it's
very
pretty.
I only had one.
Yeah.
Oh, you had one this year.
Mm-hmm. Because it's exactly what Stephanie said. I mean, sometimes it's because you're going to have to end up walking to a bus stop.
Right.
And then waiting there and then, so it's helping a few people, mm-hmm. but we understood when the community member brought it to us, we're like, yeah, that makes sense. To reduce that because it was fairly arbitrary.
Yeah, the 1 mile is arbitrary. We're just saying, why should we have a mile in there? Let's just say if you have a reason, come talk to us, and if we can accommodate the reason, we'll figure out the cost, and if you want to pay the cost, then we'll accommodate it.
And there has to be space available.
Right. I mean, well, if we can accommodate. The whole thing is whether we can accommodate.
So what happens when a bus fills up and a new student comes in and they live a mile and six-tenths?
We have provisions for that to ensure that we don't overfill the bus, that we have seats available, because we do know, especially at Hadley, new students are coming in and out throughout the year, so we have to have that.
Yeah.
Yep.
And they have to apply every year
if they want an exemption.
An exemption.
Mm-hmm. And this includes the Bento McKinney homeless assistance that are required to transport those children too, right?
So that's the one that we wanted to put on an action item today to see if we could, if we can vote on it today. And if we agree, then we can go ahead and start to look at those requests. Yeah. Or that request.
That one.
There may be more. If we do this, so. Mm-hmm.
The other one is, I'm not finding it quickly, what's just a highlight, non-school sponsored groups.
I was going to ask about that.
885.
Okay, we've included that one in here. We're not going to move on that tonight.
No, but I just wanted to make sure
so
that
there isn't.
We take a look at it.
Yeah, so I'd point you all towards that to look at it, and we can answer questions tonight, and you can bring your questions next time. Mm-hmm. We'll vote on it next time.
I'm not finding it. Okay. I know.
Anything else?
Same problem flipping
through. And we'll come back for a second read in 2 weeks for the
majority. Right. It's in your package, so if you want to read it before next the next meeting.
Okay. Yeah, I can't even find that.
There's a non-school sponsored group that the district, that the board does not provide funding for non-school sponsored groups for the district, and that if you're non-school sponsored and you would like to get funding, you can either apply through what's it called?
PEP.
No, what Lori does.
Supplemental
PEP. Mm-hmm. To be school sponsored or PEP or PTA.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good memory.
Mm-hmm. Good. Thank you for that.
Page 28. I apologize.
You got it. Okay, page 28.
Yeah. Pretty short, pretty sweet, but exactly what Stephanie just referenced.
Right. That's great. Okay, thank you very much. Thanks for all that work. I know it's a lot, so we'll come back to that. Let's see. And then we have another item under discussion, other board facility considerations. This was in reference to a motion that was brought to the table, but not on the agenda 2 weeks ago. Last board meeting,
3 weeks ago,
was, and by Stephanie. So I'll turn this to her.
I think I had motioned to add a facilities option to the community task force to consider leasing property from the Glen Ellen Park District to house our early childhood and preschool programs to free up space at the elementary schools. And I know we already had discussion, so don't know that we need to have discussion again on it, but I had asked, I thought it was important that the board actually vote or capture what our thoughts were on it. And I did want to bring another point forward, even if the board by majority doesn't agree that we should give it to the facilities task force as an option. I know we had said that it's something they could still consider because we're not limiting them.
Mm-hmm.
So I was wondering if we should have two board members and Paul meet with some park board representation to just even ask the question, would it even be a possibility to let the facilities task force know, because they're not going to be able to, you know, if they're talking about it, how are they? They're not going to have the capability to get the answer to that question. So should we at least try to get an answer? Is it even an option? Not necessarily details, but is it even an option? So the task force would know. And I only suggest that.
Yeah.
Because we had looked at other facilities options.
I have a comment.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. I was going to say I see what you're saying with that. I think, and maybe this is just my opinion, that if the facilities task force wants to do that, I believe they should meet with the park district. Because if we meet with the park district, at this point, it almost looks like we're starting to we're negotiating with another community board or whatever, and doing this, it's like we're directing them for what they should be doing. And I think now that we've put together this group of 38 people, I think they should consider everything, not just the things they have in front of them. And I think that they will, from the sounds of the community task force, and we should let them reach out to different parts of the community and have those discussions. We can, you know, obviously we're looking for a solution, so if someone comes to us with a solution, I think that we're going to consider it.
I don't know how you're going to have, I don't know how you're going to ask a couple of board members and the director at the park district to sit down with a couple of people from the facilities task force. So I agree with Stephanie. I think all you're doing is whether it's Erica and Stephanie and Paul or whatever, but you're just actually asking them, hey, is this a viable option? You know, I mean, obviously Stephanie and I probably know the answer to that, but so that everybody else trusts it, is that a viable option? And then that just gets turned over to the facilities. Hey, you're not directing them. We've already directed them to, as Joe would say, four options. You know, so this is just a fifth option, but you'd want to make sure it's viable. And in a sense, you know, we know we could build a school on the Spalding site if they were to consider that, right? But if we ask them to review something and they're in a room saying, I don't even know, and I just don't think protocol-wise that we should ask a couple of residents and put the park district in that position. I think, you know, a couple of board members with someone from staff should meet with them, find out if that is a viable option. And then, and if it is, and the board, you know, however they decide to do this as a group, however we decide to do it, if it's something that would move forward, then you can tell the task force, hey, this is something that is viable. It's up to you whether you want to consider it, just like the other four things that the board tasked you with. So that's just my opinion.
But don't you have a couple of identified code leads for that already?
You do.
I kind of brought you in. So I'm sorry.
This might not be a popular opinion. I just wish that the board would let the community go through the process, because we do have the chairs. We're just starting, and I know that the park district piece is already going to be at the table. So, I mean, and I can assure that. I mean, people are already talking about it, and I guess I feel like, can't we just make the assumption is that, yes, we could go and talk to the park district. Yes, there might be an option there at some point, and that it, you know, it possibly could be viable. I just don't want to have multiple conversations going without the process kind of moving. I guess that's just what I worry about, is that I want the community to be able for this to be their process and for them to move through it.
Mm-hmm. But here's the fault with that, and I'll take issue with that. If you're the park district, you've not weighed in on this at all. Okay, their issue is not they don't have to help solve the school district's issue, right? So if that task force is moving forward and there's pressure mounting as an option, you've now put the park district in a really funny spot. And when we say getting out and jumping in front of people, right, with information, that's what we should be doing with the park district, being open and honest with them and saying, hey, this is it. We can fool ourselves and say that we're not directing the task force to anything, but clearly prior to this, to Stephanie and I being on this board, the task force was given, as I said, Joe said, four things, right? So we've already kind of put them a little bit in a box. For them to move forward and talk about something that is a big what if, all you're doing is saying to them, the park district said, hey, we've got some space available, we're willing to lease it, that's an option for you. It's not, the board is not intervening in that. So I would take you to task on that. I think it's getting out ahead in front of information.
I just am wondering if we could let them get started a little bit, and then when that moment comes, that could be a conversation. That's just my feeling on it. It's only been two meetings. It's just
so early. But I hear you. I hear what you're saying.
But we've already passed them before, thank you.
Back to
Joe. Yeah, thank you. No, I mean, Eric, what is important is your perspective, and that's what it has to be. But from my, looking at it from my lens, I don't think you go to any one person who owns a building. I think if the concept is doable, it may be doable at other buildings in our district. So don't limit yourself to the Park District. That may be the best option. You may think it's the best option. They may think it's the best option. But there may be other options out there. And I would like to hear if there's 37 people who have joined this task force. They're coming with their lens. And I'd like to hear what they have to say with the options that may be out there. If you believe they, if they believe they have a clean slate, not only do they have the four options, but they can get creative. And that's what I thought we needed. The goal of this was they could get creative. They could come up with numerous other options for us to review.
I don't think anybody said they could.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. I'm thinking it's a good thing. Mm-hmm. And they may say there's a building that none of us had thought about, that the Park District doesn't own, that suits us location-wise and size-wise and cost-wise even better. One of those people may know that building. I don't know. So I wouldn't want to limit it, because then by making that proactive action, I think you're telling them that, hey, this is the one that we're limiting to, which is the Park District building. But to me, from a real estate perspective, there's other real estate in this community, and it may be viable.
Well, so there's a lot of options, and then you should not have passed them with the four options that you came up with the Vienna.
But we did.
But we just said that they have a clean slate and can be creative. And
but you can't hold both arguments against me then. You can use one argument or the other.
I'm not holding any argument against you at all. I'm saying we've already started the task force.
Yeah, the motion was to direct the administration to further engage the community and staff with conversation around facilities, and then based on that, this is where the board had ended with these options, right? Because we had been studying it. So that was, you know, you're right, that was the motion, that's what moved forward. But I would, I mean, to pick up on what Stephanie said and you know, just connect the dot back to Joe, it's a group that has multiple layers of experience, background, years here in the community, some fresh sets of eyes. I mean, it's such a rich group of people. And I said this the last time, Stephanie, the fact that, you know, it was voiced is on the table. This is theirs, and for them to be creative with it. So, you know, I think on is the task force meeting Thursday night. So perhaps the step is to let them know that the board had a good conversation around this, and my sense is that I'm hearing go and do, and don't limit, and know that this is something that could be of interest. I wonder if the co-chairs think that there's any value in having a board member or two.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah, let them.
I don't want
this
the board
is theirs.
To reach the Park District, and they may want to reach the Park District themselves.
This is theirs to decide on some level. And they may come back and say, yeah, let's have, you know.
Or they want to participate in that.
Right, yeah, exactly. So, you know.
So is there something
my motion was to just present the facilities task force with an option. I wasn't telling staff to do anything with it.
I know that.
Suggestion about the park board, but you know, I wasn't on the board when you came up with the four options to get the facilities task force, and I do think, you know, it's kind of, I get two sides, like, well, we're not going to limit them. We want to, and this is nothing against the task force. I know there's a talented group of people doing that, but in my mind, I feel like you have kind of limited them, and this was an idea I had. I wasn't on the board. I couldn't put it on the list of the options, so I thought it was important to present to them. And to Joe's point about, well, we shouldn't limit them to the park board, the reason that the park board even came about is because they've done a feasibility study. We know they have excess capacity. It would be a win-win for the community. We all pay, you know, we pay taxes to the park board, to District 41, and so it would be, you know, making the most of our space and our tax dollars, hopefully. So that's how it all came about. It wasn't just looking for a space.
No,
and the preschool program needs to be in those buildings.
And I think this just shows the iterative process of, you know, kind of board turnover too. So the motion that was set forth that the board moved was where the task force started, you know, that engagement of community, et cetera. And so that started the process. And having this conversation is that next step. Now that what's different is the task force is in place and you have co-chairs. And that it seems to me, I personally don't want to usurp that leadership role from them and let them decide. But it's out there, and I think it's fine. I think it's great. It's just the nature of iteration of ideas and put it back out there and let them think about it. And they might come back and say, we want some intervention, and here's what we think makes sense. And see what they say on Thursday. I mean, is there consensus from the board that this is a good idea? Put it over, give it to the task force. You know, that we have consensus that this is something they should have on the table to talk about, continue to talk about.
No, not for me. It might be for the rest of the board. Mm-hmm. The problem I have is that we kicked it off, and one of the things when I went to the first meeting, we were trying to gather people together before we actually put it together. And when we did, there was a real sense in the room with, are you just trying to drive something here? And our idea was, no, we're going to put you together. We're going to give you this basis to start on. And then you figure this out and come back to us what you think might be a good idea. So we could leverage more people. There was this concept that we shouldn't go out and get a professional to do this because we didn't want it to look like it was coerced. And that has caused a lot of work internally in the administration to get this done, and we've done it. We've kicked it off. I hate to mess with it now.
Mm-hmm.
They can listen to this meeting. They can listen to this topic. I think it's a worthwhile thing for them to think about. I don't want to start adding things to it because then they have a moving target, and they may think, what's going to happen on week 9? Are you going to come back to us with something else? Mm-hmm. We kind of started it off, kicked it off to them. I think they're going to know about this. They should run the task force. Mm-hmm. If this is something we should do, maybe after the task force comes back, and we have to look at the recommendations. If it's something we should do, then we'll talk about it then. But I'm really reluctant to try to get in there and direct them. That's why we don't have any board members on that task force.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's why we're not participating in it. It's, we don't want to be driving them now. We kind of kicked it off and said, go do this.
Mm-hmm.
But And I'm sorry, that makes absolutely no sense to me. Because you've already directed them. I'll say it again. This board, you sat on it. You directed them to put four options. And now to sit back, it's disingenuous. To sit back and say, and act as if, we want them to just go ahead and take off with this thing. I'm okay with that. But you sat on this board and voted to give them four options. You limited them. You yourself sat on this board and limited them with your decision. Now are you saying that you're changing that? And again, this is not a limitation. This is adding. This is adding an option. Not limiting. We're not saying take four items and go to three. We're saying go from four to five. That's adding. That's not limited. So I'm sorry, okay. But that makes zero sense to me.
It thank you, Dean, for that and Kurt too. So is there, what's the rest of the board? Let me frame this. So is there consensus to be able to share with Erica and Paul on Thursday night? The board discussed this. There was discussion and consensus that this is an option that is welcome to be considered. Have at it. It's one of part of the original motion. It's iterative and added to the original motion.
Yes, I'm a little lost because I thought you already said
they're talking about it.
So to me, the fact that Stephanie brought it up as a motion three weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
they've grabbed onto it at some level.
Well, just to make a correction, we haven't gotten into deep conversations, but I know that individuals are thinking about that particular piece.
Okay.
Yeah, we're not even...
Right. Right. Okay. You're early stages.
Right.
So are we comfortable with her going back and...
Well, I'm still confused because I thought we added to this discussion. I thought that was already put to bed, quite frankly, last time because we had consensus not to move forward and make it a proactive option. That's what I thought. Then I thought this discussion was now talking about going, being proactive to the park district. So are we going back right. to the last thing we already had no consensus on and asking?
Well, I'm not hearing the board saying, yes, let's let the board take this on and go and have a conversation. Am I hearing board members agree to that?
So that's what we're
I'm not.
About
that was not my motion.
Yeah, and that
well,
was right.
And the reason that I brought it back, though, is because there was, in the minutes, we
could but I'm still want to know if we're taking consensus on
On what?
On the park district part. About going to the park district. Is that what we're looking consensus on? Because that I say no to.
No.
And then I'll leave.
Right. And I'm what I heard is board members saying that's a step that is beyond what the original conversation was.
Okay.
So I would not be for that. Again, I think that's too much intervention.
Because the last matter is already a consensus not to move forward. So this
and about Stephanie wanted to bring this back because it was not originally on the agenda, and so to have the conversation and to get consensus, she wanted to we put it on the agenda to have this discussion.
Consensus for what though? Consensus for what we didn't have consensus for last time? Or consensus to go move forward, to be proactive with the movement towards the park district meeting?
Consensus to have the board share this, you know, that this conversation occurred. They will hear it or listening to it potentially too, and that it's a conversation that is valid. It's just another iteration of some of the conversation that the task force can have. I don't hear, so that's the consensus, is that it's a fair conversation to have. It's one of some other options.
Do we need to make a motion and take a vote on it?
Let's just run your motion. That way everybody's pretty clear on where they're, that way it captures where everybody on this board feels.
It's.
And
we better get the motion right.
Yes.
Let's make sure we state exactly, just to Joe's point.
Right.
What are you
that's
voting
clear,
on? Just
because
make sure
two you're conversations.
Well, we have to.
Well,
she's
going to
state
she's gonna have to state the motion.
Just
yeah.
Just so I know, everybody knows where my position is on the consensus. Last time in August 24th, we did not come to, I was not in agreement, didn't come to consensus on bringing this as a fifth option.
Right.
But they had open group, they could discuss it if they would, but it was just not a fifth option. And this time we're talking about moving forward and having a proactive conversation with the park district, and on that I'm saying no. So just for the consensus purposes. If there's a motion.
Are you voting no on the motion?
I don't know what the motion
is. You've got to hear the motion. Thank you, Joe.
I'm bifurcating the two.
You're separating them out. Yes, got it.
Because I'm a little confused by what just transpired.
Okay.
Well, and I think I probably confused the issue because the original intent was to just put the original motion on here so we could actually capture what the board thought, because we couldn't do that before because it wasn't an agenda item. I had said if we felt it was an option we wanted to move forward with, would the board want to talk with the park board? That part wasn't part of my motion. I was just throwing that out there.
Didn't respond that.
All right.
As supplemental, but that was not part of my motion, so I apologize.
Well, she would have read the motion.
My motion said,
okay.
Read the motion.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Stephanie.
I motion to add a facilities option for the community task force to consider, which would be to lease property from the Glen Ellen Park District to house our early childhood and preschool programs to free up space at the elementary schools.
Second.
Okay. Any further discussion? Okay. My only caution, personally, is that, that there's always a slippery slope. So will we have another suggestion in another 2 weeks that we then add again and again and again? And that would be my only caution, as I hear you say that this is, you know, again, adding a requirement versus... Sounds like they're going to have that as part of their conversation anyway.
Well, I'm not bringing this forward to change your opinions. I actually brought it forward. It was on August 10th before the task force started on purpose, you know. But I do feel it's important to capture what we thought about it, and that's why I asked if we could put it on the agenda just to capture that. The intent was not to make you change your opinions. It was to capture what everyone thought, and if you're
feel the same way, that's fine. Mm-hmm. But I did originally bring it forward mm-hmm. before the task force started on purpose for that reason. I would agree you don't want to keep bringing things forward, but the purpose tonight is not to change your mind.
Does that put us in a parliamentary box, I would say? What if the task force comes with, well, we want to talk to the Wheaton Park District? Since we voted on Glen Ellen, can they not talk to Wheaton or Lombard?
They can talk to Lombard. Well,
according to the team, they're okay to talk about anything they want.
I'm just saying, when you vote on something, you're creating absolutes.
Well, the intention behind Stephanie's motion is to say we already have this. This is a community partner.
Yeah.
There's space, etc. So, are we saying go ahead and add that to specifically to look at that?
Right.
Are we?
Right. Mine is to the voting and the procedural thing. If we're voting on Glen Ellen, do we have to vote on Wheaton? Do we have to vote on Lombard? Because we said Glen Ellen.
But right. You just have to vote on the motion. And you could say the four options we've already given them in test box. And I mean, this was just
idea. I don't. In answer to your question, I don't. The intention is not to box in. It's to say this specifically. Stephanie would like us to vote yes or no on whether or not this should be added to. This doesn't, and I'll say this again, preclude the task force from having any conversations about this.
Right, right.
Doesn't preclude them, right,
yeah,
from doing
right.
that.
No, right.
So, right, it's already out there formed.
My intention is...
All right, we'll have to do a roll call.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, all right, anything else? Thank you. Okay, Mrs. Gust?
Mr. Wojcicki?
No.
Mr. Alker?
No.
Ms. Nelson?
No.
Ms. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Buckle?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
No.
Mr. Ellis?
Thank you. And again, thank you for bringing it to the table and good discussion. All right. Action items. We have the consent agenda. Are there any items board members would like removed from the consent agenda to be considered separately? I would like to pull the August 10th regular meeting because they've been amended in order for board members to make sure that we take a look at that. So that's, again, under Other Matters, number 4, August 10th, 2015, regular meeting amended minutes. Anything else? All right. Then let me read the consent agenda without that, and we'll take a roll call. May I have a motion to approve the consent agenda, which includes item 1, human resources, personnel report, employment recommendations, resignation and retirement, internal transfer, item 2, finance, facility and operations, A, school district payment order for August 19th through September 4th, 2015, item 3, application for recognitions of schools, which we received in our board packet, item 4, other items, A, approval of board meeting minutes. Item 2, August 20th, 2015, special meeting open. Item 3, August 20th, 2015, special meeting closed. Item 4, August 24th, 2015, regular meeting open. Item 5, August 25th, 2015, regular meeting closed. And item 6, August 27th, 2015, special meeting open.
Motion.
Second. Mr. Elger and Mr. Escalante. Okay, roll call.
Mr. Buczynski?
Yes.
Mr. Elger?
Yes.
Mrs.
Nelson?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Buckle?
No.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis? Yes.
Okay, great, thank you. All right, may I have a motion to approve the August 10th, 2015 regular meeting amended as presented?
Motion.
Is there a second? There's no second. Okay. In this case, if I can just read this process, in the consent agenda meeting process, if an item is pulled from the consent agenda, it becomes a new action item, which is what we've done. We've pulled it to be a new action item. A motion to accept the amended agenda item is called. If it's seconded, a vote is taken. There's discussion, then a vote is taken and then recorded. If the board does not accept the amended version, the original item remains intact. so I don't hear a second. So we'll have a roll call on the item as original, as originally, as the original item versus the amended minutes.
Mr. Buchinski?
Yes.
Mr. Alger?
Yes.
Mrs. Malcolm?
Yes.
Mrs. Park?
No.
Mr. Buckle?
No.
All right.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Okay. Sure. Okay. I guess I don't really know exactly. Can I talk about the minutes for a second? Because I'm a little unsure of what just happened, because there was part of the minutes that were missing that I thought was important to be there. And I was just going to vote no on the consent agenda, but I didn't want to hold up the minutes from being published.
Right.
But I'm confused when from pulling it.
She was going to pull it so you could have that conversation, but there was no,
but there was no,
no
second.
Second, so she couldn't. She, it died right there.
Right.
And she was going to have that same conversation about the minutes, but then
I
it.
That was to approve the minutes. Right.
She was going to pull them in and
right.
talk about them.
Right. Exactly.
So, but nobody gave her a second, so she couldn't.
But I do want to say, as an aside, that that this is. I think this is a really important conversation, and so I do want to. I'm going to follow up to make sure that we're understanding the. Intention of minutes, of protocol of minutes, those type of things, so that we have clarity around amending the minutes. So I'm gonna for the record follow up with Stephanie so we can talk about this too. And Mrs. Moak is back on Tuesday the 22nd, so we can.
We understand the intent of the minutes. The intent of the minutes is to capture history, and it doesn't have to be word for word,
mm-hmm.
but it has to somebody has to be able to read the minutes. And have a basic understanding of what occurred at the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
At the positions placed so that someone can do that. For some reason, this board has operated under the guise of skeleton minutes,
mm-hmm.
and we are going to continue to push this issue until, and they are improving. But
yeah, and that's why
will,
I want to have the
and
conversation.
You could, well, you could have had a conversation before with Stephanie as to what you just did. And when we talk about no surprises, she did exactly what this board has asked her to do, which was communicate to the superintendent what she felt about it, and then the play that you just did
mm-hmm.
was the surprise, which makes you a hypocrite for saying what you just what you accuse us of doing, which is no surprise.
Thank you, Kurt.
So,
we'll follow up.
The frustrating
right.
thing is I communicated that I had emailed the addition to the minutes last week, and with the vacation schedule, something happened and it didn't get added to the minutes. And I didn't want to hold the minutes up.
Mm-hmm.
And I understood.
I know, and you said that in your...
But I had very clearly communicated today, you know, I don't want to hold up the minutes. I'm not going to make a big deal out of it. I'll just vote no, and I'll explain why I'm voting no. And it would have been nice if I had been informed of what you were trying to do, because I had no clue. I didn't understand why you had pulled them.
In order to discuss them. Because they're, when you have amended minutes, it means there's some things that's been changed. So if they're in the consent agenda, we want to make sure we pull them out.
I was told during
no.
the meetings we can't change the minutes. If you're going to change them or add something to them, it has to go to the next meeting.
I think, and that's that recommendation piece that I think we've got to,
which is what happened
because they were put.
So
no,
so
I don't think I could add it to the minutes because I've been told we can't add to the minutes of the meeting. If you want to change, if you want to add to it,
you mean in the live meeting?
Yeah,
correct.
So
right.
What I would recommend, if there are errors, a grammar, if there's a date, if there's anything along those lines. To email Nancy that you see those and make those. If there's a change, please let us know that you want to make a language change. That needs to be hammered out at the board meeting right here so we can have the language. The problem is we're putting Nancy or whomever right in the middle of agreeing with the language you submit or you submit.
But
and
that's what
and
you
that's
guys told
the
us
converse-
to do.
And that's the that, conversation.
That was what you told us to do, and we have been told in procedure you can pull minutes at any point. You've asked us not to do that to put staff in a funny spot. So we've attempted not to do that, and then you do what you did tonight. So at this point, if I don't see the minutes going forward, I'm just going to pull them, and we'll go back to the way that we did them. That's how this game's going to get played.
And it's Kurt, we didn't have a second. We have to follow procedure. So that's why I want to sit down and make sure that we talk it through. And I do want to do that so that there's an understanding.
Why didn't I? Nobody.
You knew what you were doing, Erica. Don't play here like as if this was so confusing to you.
We will continue this conversation. I understand that, Stephanie, and we'll.
I didn't know what was happening. I was
open.
We will discuss
it now. We don't need to continue the conversation.
Nobody informed me what was happening. There's no reason you couldn't have seconded it, knowing what you were trying to do. And I didn't know what was happening, so I was nervous about seconding it. If you knew that was the plan, I'm going to do this so Stephanie can make her point, then you should have seconded it.
This is how some people
this is this,
you guys tell us to operate under a certain
Kurt,
guideline.
Thank you.
You guys operate under
that's not true. We're going to move on, but we'll have this conversation in terms of protocol and make sure that we have it. The next item of business is superintendent's recommendations. Okay. Oops, I'll move this over here. Yeah. There you go. The intergovernmental agreement.
Yep.
Intergovernmental agreement with Village of Glen Ellen reciprocal reporting. At the August 24th, 2015 Board of Education meeting, the board discussed the intergovernmental agreement with the village, which serves as a reciprocal reporting agreement solidifying the relationship between the district and village by outlining how information is shared regarding student misconduct and unlawful activities. May I have a motion to approve the intergovernmental agreement between the Village of Glen Ellen and Glen Ellen School District Number 41, providing for and authorizing the development of guidelines for reciprocal reporting and guidelines for interviews of students by law enforcement officers.
Motion.
Second.
Okay, discussion. This was a document that was also in our board packet.
Right. I have a question asked in the board regarding interviews. After school is not school-related
items. Joe, can you speak up just a little bit?
Last meeting, I asked a question regarding interviews of students by the students on non-related school issues. It was just that there seemed to be no reach out to, well, there was reach out to the parents, but the parent possibly would not be able to be at that interview, yet that interview would happen. Is that difficult? I mean, is that...
The police officers have the right to have those interviews. On a non-school issue, that's Bill Homer, the chiefs, those are their conversations that they have with individual community members.
He answered that.
Yeah.
I asked for further clarification, but thanks. I appreciate it.
And that, was there any significant changes to this from?
Not from the last time I was at the board. There was no change. There's none.
Okay. All right. Any other discussion, questions? All right, roll call, please.
Mr. Buczynski?
Yes.
Mr. Eldred?
Yes.
Mrs. Simpson?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Buckholz?
Yes.
Mr. Galante?
Yes.
Okay, item two, resolution of approval of IMRF authorized agent. The Board of Education must appoint an authorized municipal retirement fund agent to serve as a point of contact for IMRF matters. On August 27, 2015, the district appointed Rebecca J. Allard as interim assistant superintendent of finance, facilities, and operations. Until a permanent replacement is found, Rebecca J. Allard will be named as the district's IMRF registered agent. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation as presented?
Motion.
Any discussion?
I think I know the answer, but I want to clarify this. It just makes sure the agent does not put her in the fire.
Correct.
Yeah. Anything else? Okay, roll call.
Mr. Buczynski?
Yes.
Mr. Eldred?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Buckholz?
Yes.
Mr. Esquante?
Yes.
Okay, item three, resolution for construction change orders. At the Finance and Facilities Committee meeting earlier this evening, The administration presented for discussion a resolution to allow the Director of Buildings and Grounds to approve change orders with final approval of the superintendent to reduce allowances contained with the contract award for the additional four classrooms and auxiliary space at Churchill School in an amount less than, is that accurate?
Yes.
$50,000. The process detailed in the resolution is the same process as the district used for the other 16 classroom additions. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation as presented? Mr. Bochensky?
Second.
Okay, discussion.
I'll reiterate what I said at Finance Committee. I am going to vote no against this. There's just no incentive to keep costs down. And I know that we can stay within we can talk about the scope, yet I've seen this district run a slippery slope on many fronts and say that we're operating in a certain fashion and we're hiding behind, and I'm going to say hiding behind, certain things. And we're saying that it's justified because we've kind of, sort of, attached it to something. And when we talk about a scope, we can sort of, kind of, attach something to the scope and approve, $45,000 to it. And when you're talking about, we've got a gap between what we have budgeted, what we're going to try and come in under budget, some of those things are prearranged as to that. We've got kind of that gap, and there's a few dollars or a few percentages of money that we could maybe slide some things under the scope and still say that we were under budget. That was number one. Number two, we gave this authority to Mr. Cicerella, and I was in the audience at the time, the only argument for that was because it was summer construction. We are in session. We will be meeting every 2 weeks from here on out. And then this board forgot to take that authorization away through the school year. So they didn't keep track of, and again, I was not part of that. This prior board did not even keep track of that to take that authority away when they granted it to them for a few months and then left it in place. So, then this becomes in perpetuity. So I'm going to vote against it for those reasons.
Thank you.
The scope issue was brought up at the Finance Committee. And the scope is pretty specific with the building plans. We have a recent history of 16 classrooms being built, and we were under budget by a significant amount. So I think that recent example, that recent performance, should hopefully buffer people's concerns of lack of trust, so forth and so on. So I think this is, and it was discussed, that this is practice in normal for districts that are doing construction projects. We're talking about staying within the budget, not for items that take us out of budget. We are talking about items that are in allowances. We're not talking about change of scope. You're right, Kurt is correct, that did make a faux pas with Bob's resolution. We should have made a move. Kurt should have made a move in May when he got on with Stephanie, and they made that motion.
But I found it about a month or two later. So you can thank me for that.
So
there's a watch.
We found it all together. So it happened. Mm-hmm. But as far as the scope, risk, it's non-existent in the first 16 classrooms. I think the last four, this would be a good practice to continue.
Well, the only other thing I heard, I just happened to be sitting in on finance too, and that was that, just to clarify, that the agent that we're using is still the same one, FQC, that's been involved since the beginning of the project, which also, to me, reinforces the fact that they'll be following the same protocol that they have been. So it's not a new vendor involved with this. Anything else?
I'm going to vote no as well. I agree with what Kurt said, and to add to that, we granted this authority before because the board was going to be off in the summer. We meet regularly, and as a matter of fact, we just had an emergency meeting a couple of weeks ago for staffing. You know, so I it can be done if there was an emergency. So I don't see a need to put it in place when we're meeting regularly. And also, I have concern that I'm not sure what's the urgency on this, because it was on the Finance Committee meeting tonight, which I couldn't attend that meeting, and then it's an action item at the meeting now, and there's, you know, where's the 2-week time between the discussion and when we take action? I've had no opportunity to get the community's input on this before I make a decision, and I don't understand why we're, you know, like, for example, the policy that we changed, we took action on the one policy specific because there was a concern from a community member. The others will take action on the next meeting. I don't know, understand why this is coming to action the same night that there's discussion, an ordinary discussion at our meeting here. It was at the Finance Committee. I don't feel that I don't think we're setting a good precedent by making decisions like that when we're not having discussion and allowing us to do our job and properly vet the matter. So I'm going to be voting no as well.
Can I ask a question from Finance? Because this was, I think this relates to what Stephanie was saying, and that is the number of changes. It's an issue of, as I recall from Finance, of being able to move the project forward. I agree with you. I mean, we meet regularly, meaning we meet twice a month for sure with our regular business meetings. To call a quorum is not always necessarily going to happen with people's travel schedules or work or that type of thing. So there is some risk involved in if there a change that needed to be done quickly because of materials or whatever there might be, that it isn't a given that we're always going to be four of us around. So I think that's part of it. But what was the conversation around that in terms of numbers or at the Finance Committee? I mean, how many change orders there are?
Well, I mean, we had a summary of change orders last time that was many pages long. Some are $150, and some are $39,000. We're talking about within allowances and contingencies of an approved budget by this board.
Mm-hmm. But they have a $10,000 authority, right? So $150 would still be moving through.
But the $39,000. So, and
it's a lot more money.
It is, but it's all within budget. It's all within scope. And in construction projects, and Jack can speak really out of completing this, but in construction projects, you delay, I mean, weather changes, why you're delayed, things don't get covered and all that, you could have significant cost increases due to delaying decisions that can be made at the, you know, within less than 24 hours notice. That has to happen. And this is why this practice is used. If you're changing scope or you're out of budget, then they have to come back to the board with this resolution. And I think there's a lack of understanding of what happens out in the field where we've just built 16 classrooms and had this policy in place, and it worked.
But I thought you said it was an accident that we left it in place during the school year. It was only supposed to be during the summer. So that's where I don't understand.
I agree.
That was a mistake. Why?
That was a miss.
Now we need to do it, but it was a mistake than when we did it before. That's
where I'm struck. Here's the thing for me is it may have been a mistake that we didn't rewrite the resolution after the summer months, but we still needed to give the authority to do this to keep these classrooms moving in the timeline in which we get reported to us. I mean, there are active things that happen on a construction site.
Why does that have to be $50,000? Would $10,000 be more reasonable? Like, you know, we have, you know. If the administration wants to spend $10,000, they don't have to come to the board.
The 7-page sheet we got of change orders that we reviewed this past, I forget if that was at the end of June or the beginning of August.
Mm-hmm.
You remember? It was at the beginning of August. August 10th had line items that were above $10,000. I can't recall if they were 1, 2, or 7.
Like what? I guess what percentage
of the total dollar amount? Mm-hmm.
So,
I mean, you can
just it's just a lot of money, and I just
it's not a lot of money in the sense that you're within budget. You're not out of budget. You have allowances. If you look at the budget, you look at the contract. There's allowances and there's contingencies so that you can get these facilities built. These professionals are acting within those approved budget items. They're not going outside of those budget items. You're moving from one line item to another often, is what's happening, from one sub to another. So to me, this is normal practice in the world in which I live in developing real estate. I know that when finance people talk about it, when construction people talk about it, it's normal practice too. I mean, based on my knowledge, based on how I act professionally, this is what happens. It made sense the first 16 questions. The resolution, I agree, may have not been changed from the summer months to the length of the project like it should have been, but it's still acted in the same manner in which we needed it to act. And at the end, we reviewed it all. If there was something you saw in that review that didn't make sense, then by all means, review it and ask Jack or ask Jack to get clarification. We're in a critical part right now because the report said foundations were full. I mean, this is the most risky part of timeline because your building's open, the weather's changing on us. So to me, this is the critical time to have that so that you're not coming in every 24 hours to approve a change order, which is within the budget. So you approve that budget. You approve those allowances. You know, going back at it, the way I look at it now, just thinking about it here as we're talking about it, you shouldn't have approved anything to want allowances. Or contingency. You shouldn't approve those. And then you should have came back and said, every time you have an allowance that you want to change over $10,000, come in here and get it approved. Every time you want to, we have a contingency, but you're not allowed to use it, anything over $10,000, come in here and let us approve it in the contingency.
Which could bring the project to a screeching halt.
Right. Well, the thing is, too, when construction projects, time and time, you delay it for one day, the next day it rains, you're filling holes with water. And then you're spending 3 days to get the pumps in the hole to get them out of water.
Okay, I think I
appreciate all the explanation. I guess back to my point, finance discussed it tonight. I couldn't make that meeting, and it comes to action at this meeting. If it had actually given me 2 weeks to process it and maybe do some research and look at the numbers, maybe I would be in favor of it. But that's not how it happened. I've not had any time to process this, and I'm not going to vote in favor of it.
Okay,
so.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, roll call.
Mr. Bochinski?
Yes.
Mr. Elter?
Yes.
Mr. Nelson?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark?
No.
Mr. Buckle?
No.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
All right, thank you.
You're postponing these.
Yes, we're postponing these. Okay, items 4 and 5 are being postponed till
September
28th meeting. Item 6, board policy revision and adoption transportation. This is the 4110 that we just took a look at. The Board of Education Policy Committee examines policies and or procedures that have been updated as a result of changes in Illinois or federal law that require revisions in order for the district to be compliant or to reflect current policy and or practices. The changes for adoption affect policy 4110, operational services transportation. The policy has been updated in response to community request for access to bus transportation for a fee. The update eliminates the transportation for a fee 1.0-mile radius requirement. This update does not allow for any new stops or routes to be added. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation as presented?
Motion.
Second.
Discussion? We just talked about this previously. Mm-hmm. Okay. Roll call.
He was a little ahead of you.
He was a
little
ahead of you. Sorry. Mr. Elder?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Buckle?
Yes.
Mr.
Clark? Yes.
Okay, thank you. All right, superintendent reports.
Attached, and we'll have it posted within 48 hours, is the annual administrator and teacher salary report that's required by school code to be posted and mentioned at the board meeting, so that is what I'm doing. There's not a whole lot beyond that. Enrollment report. We discussed it a little earlier, so I just open it up, Stephanie, to you to ask some questions.
Kind of expand upon what we were talking about before. You know, and just looking at the numbers, something that Mrs. Rath pointed out, kind of one note of concern is the EEC or the gifted accelerated students. It seems like it's not necessarily consistent at the schools, but you know, in some of our schools, all of those students are in one class, and they're getting pulled out for math, but they're in that class for science. And you know, I don't know what our logic is for that, but I thought our classes are supposed to be heterogeneous groupings, and I'm just not really sure how heterogeneous it is if you have all of those students, those top-tier students, in one class. So I don't know if that's the decisions that are made at the building level, but coming down from the district, but I do have concerns. If you look at level three at for fifth grade, I should say, at Lincoln and Franklin, they're all coming out of one class. Two at Churchill, two at Forest Glen. You know, Churchill for fourth grade, they're all coming out of one class. The one area that it seems like it's dispersed a little bit more evenly is grade four at Franklin. Those actually seems like it's actually dispersed among several classes, but really for all the other grade four and five at all the other schools, it's coming out of one or two classes. So just to note that.
Yeah, so building level, I'll reach out. We'll get an explanation. I'll get that to you. I don't want to speak for the building principals.
And I think the number for Ben Franklin grade four math, if you follow it across under AEC, it shows 11.
Okay.
I think it's actually 16. I could be wrong. I maybe did the math.
It looks like 16.53. So it looks like 16.
So they might want to check that number. Another thing, I mean, I think at Franklin I counted there were 10 classes that are over the target.
I think overall it's 19 classes over targets.
Is that by one student, two students?
I have 13 by one student.
Mm-hmm. I think, and I know you're going to have outliers here and there, but I do think...
Because we do a 100-day count, too, that we have to submit.
Hard part when you're off by one kid, you add a teacher. I mean, now you're down to some pretty small class sizes.
There are a few classes, though.
Yeah, there's a couple. I would agree.
There's some where you can move one kid and reduce it. And we talked about this last year. There's selection reasons and all that. There's three at Lincoln. I kind of like to be on nine at Ben Franklin, four at Churchill, and three at Forest Glen for a total of 19.
Well, but to your point, Joe, last year when we talked about this, some of the feedback we got via the principals was that there are teachers who want to have some of these children in their rooms. Like they request because of the makeup of the room, the fit of the children together, that there's some interest in wanting that. And, in fact, it's a more effective classroom because of that. So, to me, that's that building level decision making. They have to, they know them. The teachers know the children better. The teachers working with the mm-hmm. principal. So,
and some of those are also driven by kind of parent request.
Yeah,
I want to be this, and this, and it really it does limit those classes. But you know what I'll do? We'll reach out to the principals. I'll get their rationale for each of those pieces. I think they're good mm-hmm. questions, and I'll make sure I have it back here in 2 weeks for you.
For me, when I look at it, though, knowing that 13 of them are off just by one person, I mean one student, they are targets. So,
yeah.
I think the little bit of those outliers, I'll reach out for those.
Okay.
Seven, do you agree that the one over is not what you're looking for?
Yeah,
I just want to make sure I'm bringing you guys back what you want.
I mean, there's a 30 at Ben Franklin.
Yeah.
Yeah, those ones that are 2 to 3
that are obviously
above you.
Yeah.
That's what we're looking for.
Well, and I think, if like every class at a school in a grade is above, even if it's one or two above, I don't know if that means evaluating or not. But
okay.
I mean, I know it's a
Yeah.
And some of that, again, may change just to, as we...
I'll bring that back. So we'll look at the 16 and AEC. We'll look at those classes that are above and by 2 to 3. But we'll also talk about those ones who are across the grade level and are all above.
How do we handle, for example, I would think a fourth grade class that's above by one student versus a kindergarten class that's above by one or two is
they're different covers.
How do we handle that? We have the targets in place, so what do we do if class sections are above the targets? Like looking at Franklin, really, I guess a lot of our schools, we have really high numbers in kindergarten.
So what we've done
we
in
evaluate, adding a section or getting
generally not a section.
Aid support in the classroom.
Aid support is what we've put in years past. And that's one way of doing it. Generally, at this point, we don't add an additional teacher. One, the parents don't want it. Two, the kids don't. It's just not a great change. But we have added aides in the past.
So is there is that something that the principals handle? They look at the numbers?
Lori's consistently looking at the numbers, having those conversations, and us meeting with the principals and seeing where we're at and how best to approach that situation. So I'll bring it up on Thursday with the ed team. On Thursday morning.
I think it's just good to know the process. I think that's what we're asking.
Absolutely.
That's what I was going to say. It's just the process. When you're looking at these numbers, do we have, one or two? I'm going to trust the principals are doing what they need to do to balance their scores, but does the process need to change? I think the easiest solution, right, is to change the target. Done. But
that's your call.
That's not what we want to do.
No.
I don't know.
Yeah.
We haven't talked about it. But, there's, you can't stop kids from coming in. So I guess my question is, we know they're above target. So what do you want to do about it?
Mm-hmm.
30? Do we change the process? Do you balance the kids? I appreciate the conversation, but I don't understand what we're trying to resolve.
So process. Really talking about
it's
that process.
It's just awareness.
It's awareness.
Just awareness.
Unless we hire aides, right? And that's a finance facilities conversation if we want to hire aides. But, the 30, take a look at it. But, one or two, what can we do about it?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, I just feel like I said, the younger grades versus the older grades should be approached differently. And 25 kindergartners in one classroom, I feel like the administration, I know this isn't coming from the board, but there should be some, proactive measures in place. Because I don't want to put we set the targets for a reason. These are really young kids. We already know we don't have full day kindergarten, which is one issue, but... I don't want to put the pressure on the teachers to have to say, I need help in the classroom. I feel like as a district, we should be proactively.
Yeah, and we shouldn't assume that the principals aren't having those conversations, it sounds like.
But I'll bring back the process and the conversation.
Mm-hmm. I do have a couple of random questions.
Okay.
On the back, the class size targets for level 3, the STAR has a different target for schools that have not made AYP for 2 consecutive years. Is that still accurate? Because what schools are those?
So AYP is no longer.
Okay.
So I think it was under the, basically under title. We're looking at Churchill.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So what we do need to change, if the board wants this to continue, is language around AYP, because AYP, Illinois has a waiver on AYP. That's not a piece for us anymore. But the intent was around a highly impacted school with social economics.
Okay. And then I think our dual language program has different targets. I don't know.
I'll have to.
If they do. We may want to call that out. Either anything.
So I'll bring those back to you.
Okay. Is there any value in seeing the enrollment numbers for level 3 lit to see the number of students in the class broken down by 4th and 5th? I know I've asked that question before, but I don't know if there's any value in seeing it from that standpoint.
Level 3 literacy, you said?
Mm-hmm.
You mean like how many 4th graders
are in
the class?
Right. Is it like 12 and 12, 5 and
I don't know. The question is what, you know, the why, what the value would be. You could certainly ask the principals if they think there's...
Yeah, we can look at it.
I guess
what
I
would the level,
like
the literacy?
I mean, maybe like we could just get one report.
Yeah, just to see.
Year, just to see. I don't know that it has to be on there every time, but I'd like to just see it once. I guess.
How it's breaking out.
So the level.
You have to be careful, right? Because a level 3 lit student is also a level 3 science student, so you wouldn't want to double count the overall.
No, science,
total.
Science and math.
Science and math.
Science and math.
So just the bottom line.
Points, we've got to make sure that everything is clean, and that's what we occurred here was we didn't have the cleanest data, and that's why we had to end up with a blue sheet. So it's ensuring that we have a good structure that's representing all the data. But what we can do is bring one level of literacy to kind of look at what does that show you. Does that tell you anything differently?
You could create a column with just that, not those numbers separate, so that they're not
Level
found.
Or you just write where, like, Abraham Lincoln, level 3, but 13/13.
I think the most important thing is for the board is it giving the information you're seeking? Well, and if it's not, then you can tell us.
Stephanie's question is a good one.
Oh, yeah. No, that's why I wanted...
I was saying another way to show the data is you got a 26 there, right? So just... put two numbers in there, 13. If it's 14 and 12, you know the first one's fourth graders, the second slash is fifth graders. If it's 14 and 12 split, I'm not saying it.
Okay.
Like you said, just to
so
for one report.
Just to recap, looking at the process, what are the things that we think about when we're making these decisions? Reviewing those classes that are 2 to 3 students above. Recognizing younger probably has a little more priority over the older students. Double checking the AEC numbers. I believe it should be 16, not 11. The literacy level, just give us an example of a school, what that would look like. That won't be a part of this report, but that we would bring it back to the board to say, does it give you any other information that you were seeking, or is it just one more column of information? Does that sound?
Outside of the data you're going to use, if you can give us, if you have a recommendation, give us a recommendation.
On how to do this?
No, not on this.
Okay.
But if you're saying level, you know, the range for 20 and 22 for level 1 is good and set, I think we as a board need to take a look at hiring aides. Or no,
okay.
We're good, keep it like it is. Or, like I said, the easy thing is you raise your target range and there shouldn't be any detriment to the school or the reporting. And everybody, I appreciate you looking at the process. You're going to tell us if it works or it doesn't work, and you're going to come with a recommendation that says this. But I think you should also give us the recommendation that says, I appreciate that we are over target. We need to add aides. That's a recommendation for the board, or it's a point.
Yep. I absolutely, yeah, no, I get what you're saying. So within that, I'm just pulling out that Ben Franklin one. If we feel like we're high, one of those pieces that you want coming back is, what are you going to do to solve that? And one of those answers is maybe nothing or maybe an aid. Is that what I'm hearing?
And that, last question is...
Yeah, that's what I just want to keep...
Days from now, somebody's not told, well, you directed the superintendent to do something on his own. So is everybody...
That's why I'm looking. That's why I continue to ask.
Picking on you.
Okay.
Picking on the board to make sure that everybody is looking for that.
I'm okay with yourself and Paul.
Thank you.
I'm just amazed that we have 25, 21, 21
at
Ben Franklin
and
kindergarten. But anyways,
that's
a
good question.
Last question. Last question. When do our numbers kind of settle in? I know we have to give the state a 100-day count.
Hey, our, not a 100-day count. Our, and I just forgot the term. Looking. Anybody? October. Student Housing Day. So it's middle of October that we'll have those numbers. But we do see fluctuations with our numbers, and you can see that in prior reports. If you go back, you see these numbers, and then the fall housing report. I knew it would finally come to me,
which confirms residency.
That's the one where the state takes the numbers. Those are your numbers. That's your funding source based off of those numbers. That's what that's the importance of the fall housing numbers.
Also, to touch back to what was asked, was public participation. I think it would be good to see the Hadley numbers, and maybe not. That's going to be a lot of information, but
it's a big piece of.
I don't know if there's a way just to.
I'll ask Steve if there's a better way.
Document or something to look at, maybe broken down by.
Do they have it?
Yeah. It's just a lot of
producing.
Is that what you want?
Just to, you know,
just
I think
to see
more
it.
Out of curiosity to see kind of what it looks like. Maybe that's like a once a year thing.
Okay.
If you want to wait till October when they're settled. Like
they're in teams.
They're in teams, but they're still broken out by classroom. So I still have X amount of kids in science, sixth grade science, and this month. So yeah, it'll be a much larger report than this.
Core courses, maybe.
Yeah, it's just how they're grouped. All right, is that it with that?
Yeah, that's it.
Community Facility Task Force update. I think we've talked a little bit here and there about it. It was another good meeting. Named two co-chairs, Lori Taylor and Tom Voltaggio, nailed down the norms and really started moving toward the meeting for this Thursday. It is about that history, really trying to go back and say what have different groups looked at, different Blue Ribbon committees, what proposals have been brought forward, and Dave's going to help facilitate some of that conversation around that history and trying to get back into the 90s and then bringing it forward to today's look. So we're looking forward to that. Again, the first two meetings have been fantastic. It'll be 7 a.m., Forest Glen, and then we'll have tours on... apologize. So, thank you. 7 p.m. 7 p.m.
Mr. Curry saying, I'm going to
get 37 people to show up.
Mr. Cooper, can you make that time? Right.
We have, because there's a SIP day.
Thank you.
This week, typically we're doing tours on the Friday of the school, just to get us started getting the task force into the school. I just scheduled them at noon the day after whatever school we were at. But there's a SIP day, so we'll do it on Monday instead. This time around. Otherwise, we're on Friday.
Anything else on that?
Yeah, I guess my question is, and I was there for a bit and then I had to leave. I know Erica was there as well, which was fine. Didn't have a problem with Erica being there. I'm kind of concerned, though, we never talked as a board. And again, I'm always constantly told that we have to give direction, build consensus to go out and do these things. I'm not really sure why the president was there speaking to the task force. So I'd like her to answer that for me.
Sure. So I requested her. So Eric and I, as you gave Eric and I the charge to do this piece, one of those pieces was around that history piece. So when Eric and I talked about it, we said, let's invite the board president, who has many years of history on this, to really give that perspective on where we're at, why we're doing it. Erica did not reach out to us. Erica and I reached out to her. So just for clarity's sake.
So the superintendent directed the board president to come.
He asked me. But what I did bring, because I had that question posed to me, is, and I explained this in an email, the request from Paul and what Eric put together was and I have copies of this, she put together a script, Erica Crabiel did, that provided the background. So that night, what they had wanted me to read was the kind of the history of it. So, and as I explained in the email, that this script came together from board minutes, recorded minutes, and then also data that Erica pulled together in terms of other facility information. So when you go on our facilities tab and you pull that down, the reports, background, any of those things, the 2004 report, everything that's on there, Erica went to. And so it was literally a 5-minute, and it was toward the end of the meeting, and so one of the task force members, actually Mr. Cooper, asked to be sure that this was a 5-minute presentation, which it was. And so you can see this is the script that Erica gave to me and that I read. I added one piece in here, and you'll see that's included in there in parens, which is, says I added 27,000 square feet, so to give a data number on the amount of new school classroom space that was built. So I plug that in. But other than that, this is the history as requested.
And there was a couple comments made at the facility task force where group members were maybe concerned about board members being there. I did stop and I said, is anybody? She will not. It will not hurt her feelings if she does not present. Does anybody have any concern, any question? I looked around, and I even looked at Mr. Cooper specifically, and he did say, as long as she limits it to 5 minutes, and we can move on. And it really wasn't about that. It was about the time. So I asked.
I'm not so concerned as to. I mean, I guess I'm not sure. This should have been given to the board prior to. We should have been informed that she was going there. We should have been given this information prior to her going there. I'm just trying to picture Kurt Buchholz being asked by you to go there and see how some other board members would react if I just stood up and started to talk about history, talking about full-day kindergarten, which there was actually, I got some texts from people sitting out there that were asking me, was it a priority? We haven't even, this board has never talked about full-day kindergarten. Never talked about it. Yet she's talking about it, so apparently off of the script. So I'm very concerned about what happened there. I don't agree with it, and I'm on record saying that this should not happen. If I'm to follow the guidelines that some of the people here are telling me to follow, this type of protocol should just not happen. So, and I'm upset about it. So,
well, the intention
in the future,
is,
yeah. I'll make sure that if there is a board member who will participate, I'll make sure that the board's aware and of the outline. That's mine. That's not Erica's.
She's the president of the board. She has, again, tonight, seconding the motion. She absolutely is a big person, could have notified the board. She's happy to email us if we have concerns. So that should have been an email. Hey, I'm going to be there tonight. It's nice you're falling on the sword for her, but Erica should have acted. She should.
I'll take the rap. I was asked. I was asked 3 days ahead of time. I'll take the rap. But thank you. But I did want you to have it as a provider. Board reports.
I just wanted to add one thing. I mean, because I know we've been told, you know, we can attend, but we can't speak. But I agree with what Kurt said. And in looking at this, the presentation here, I mean, it talks about the three options. It also talks about adding the option at Hadley. But there's, I mean, my big concern is, you know, that you're there representing the board and really representing all of us. And I don't see anything in here that says, you know, these are just the options the board has come up with. We want you to be creative. You can come up with other options. Like, that's not in here either. So in my mind, it says this little speech is kind of setting them up to say, look, these are the three options, plus Hadley. So, I mean, you can't go back and undo what was said, but I'm a little concerned that the tone has been set for the task force that this is what the board wants you to look to explore. I mean, it's basically right here. Read this.
It's what we were told about boxing people in. Just did.
Well, at the last sentence reads, and it says, this is your work. I extend my personal gratitude and also on behalf of the board, thank you again for stepping forward, for some of you multiple times, and volunteering your time to explore our facility's needs, options, and possible solutions. I mean, to me, that's go and do it. That was the message. So
why couldn't you add a park district proposal and say go and do it?
That's it's why already out there. They'll do it. They're going to be creative. So. All right. Board reports. Any board reports?
I have a couple. I went to the Hadley PTA meeting for Drew. He was out of town. It was their first meeting of the year, and they went through their budget, which is very impressive, the amount of money that they seem to be able to raise in their activities to provide students with other activities. The one shocking number that I saw, and I remembered this from going to a Hadley PTA meeting last year, was that they are drawing around 250 students to their activities when they put on these activities after school for the kids to come back to school and get involved. About 250, and just a couple of years ago, they were struggling to get 50. So that PTA is just on fire, and it was a really good meeting. What we always see whenever we go to the PTA meetings about how hard everybody works and very efficient. They told me that it was a 2-hour meeting, and they finished in 65 minutes, and they were mad because they went over an hour. So I thought that was something of note. The other thing was, this is really not a committee, not a normal board report, but the Glenbard Parent Series had a remarkable speaker who came and talked. They actually talked at Glenbard East, but it's open to all the Glenbard students, or actually it's open to anybody. They had a woman by the name of Carlotta Walls Lanier come and speak there, and she was part of the Little Rock Nine. So back in 1958 or whatever, I think that was the year, when all that happened with the National Guard down there, and it made national news and trying to get into the school. And her, it was unbelievable to go through the entire presentation and have her not say a negative word about anybody. That was one thing I found that was really interesting, that she could go through this, live through this process, and not have any venom towards anybody. But at the end, she was pushed for, there was sort of a setup question from the audience that said, well, don't we have a lot more to do? And, is, you know, we've come a long way and we have a lot more to do. And she said, yeah, you know, we always have a lot more to do, but I look at the lens through a black woman in America, and it's really the first 355 years, things didn't go too well for us. The last 55, we've made an awful lot of progress. So I thought that was an interesting comment. But then she quickly looked at the audience and said, but you need to do more, and what you need to realize is you live in a global community and you should all be learning other languages. And I just thought that was interesting with the amount of time that we spent about FLESS and what we're doing with Spanish here, that her biggest concern was don't start alienating other people. You should understand this bigger community and learn languages. And I thought it was a great presentation. And if anybody here gets a chance to go to any of the GPS series things, I'd highly recommend it.
Thank you. Other reports?
Well, quick, we had finance committee. We had really one item on it. We discussed it. It was the resolution for construction change orders. So it was a limited schedule on our agenda. The other item, I did go to the backyard barbecue that we had on the rainy, rainy day. I don't know what day that was.
Saturday.
Yeah, we tried. And in the morning when I was there, Kirk was getting dunked one after another. He's not here now.
Yeah.
The baseball player, fifth grade baseball player, yeah, was hit that thing
unbelievable.
Six times in a row. But there was a lot, because he was there, there was a lot of Ben Franklin parents there. They stopped by the booth. It was very active, even though it was rainy. But they had a reason to come, so it was kind of nice. So I thought that was the first time we did the event.
Yeah, thank you for doing
the
that.
The time I was there, it was very good. Time well spent.
Yeah, I agree. It was a lot of fun. I was there when it was not raining, so that was good.
I do have one, Erica.
Sure.
I was at the Team 21. Karen, thanks for having me there. There was an orientation. I kind of read off the notes. Is that okay? The orientation of new members to the Team 21. They're elected teachers and staff by their peers, so they're the ones that they chose as their leaders to Team 21. There was a couple of Lincoln absent, missed unfilled seats, and I don't know if there's one, right? And, you know, I know that we're having conversations in Lincoln. I just, you know, that's one of those things that we want to fill as soon as we can because of the conversations we're having there. And I think Team 21 is a real good forum. I did ask before we started, you know, the participants around the table what contributed to the Teams 21's success and mission, and they said it's all of them, a few teachers and administrators said that they really enjoyed the Team 21 community because they felt it was open and honest. They all treat each other as professionals, and they, though they may have disagreed, they felt that that was a forum where they could air conversations amongst peers and kind of hash it out and move forward. I talked about that, you know, as that forum has taken place over the last year and a half, 2 years, 3 years, that open and honest communication has to come back to the board. And me as that representative have to hear that so I can report at these board reports what I'm hearing from Team 21. So with that, some of the things that they had that we spoke about was D41 learning characteristics, the ongoing support, the reintroduction of those characteristics and how they're going to move that forward in the schools in the future. And then we went through the math data, which I
thought was a very interesting exercise for myself, being on the board and then Karen presenting to those teachers and staff. And there was a lot of good questions from and some of them we actually asked ourselves, but they had them. And it was a different set, and I found that they were very protective of their kids, which was nice. And they were very protective of the data. And even one of them said, why are we looking at this data so hard? Because there are social and emotional aspects to a child. And they also brought up some things about, what we had taught. Again, I'm not going to repeat our conversations, but the goals and the METs and the 50% and the 90, a kid can be 99, and how do they make it 99.1? So it was a lot of that conversation that we had, but it was nice to hear the teachers and the staff had that conversation as well. And I challenged them. I said, you need to bring forward your thoughts back to the board, and I can be that representative at those meetings, but you got to have that back and forth communication with your leadership team, to the board, to the PTA community, to the administration, because we have to have that constant communication flow between teachers and parents and administration and board. And I thought it was a very exciting meeting. I learned a lot. It's always interesting to hear the other side of the story when you talk about data, but it was very enthusiastically conversation with the MAP data. So thanks, Gary, for inviting me.
Okay.
I was at the PTA Council today. So Mrs. Esquante's first meeting. Nice job. It did run long. Mr. Elger would have probably stroked out.
Pet peeve.
But that was okay, because in the end there was a lot of good conversation. People were able to vet a lot of things, I thought. Mrs. Esquante let a lot of conversation occur that some people may have cut off, and it allowed them to vet it, and it worked as a meeting, and it put me behind for the entire day, but that was okay. So.
Thank you for going. On August 27th, there was a CIT meeting. I thought I would test our board report, so I'm going to hand this out and see if this is helpful. I know we haven't used this yet. I gave a copy to Mrs. Gus to give to Nancy so she can have some details. So see what you think. I mean, the intention of the board report, to give a context, was actually came from a comment that Stephanie made when she first started on the board, and that was some continuity of board reporting. Sometimes we get really deep reports, sometimes we get high level, and so that this might be a way to provide some of that. Essentially, at CIT, what we did was I just summarized the key issues. That was a working document, and what CIT is looking at being that link to all the district teams, who they are, and then the focus for 2015-16 is these two areas: highly effective professional learning communities, and their intention, and then the long-range plan renewal, which I know obviously the board is a part of as well. So CIT is going to be looking at that from their lens. And I would concur with what Patrick said. I think that, all of our teams for excellence are very focused on what their goals and objectives are. And for CIT, it's really about thinking that higher level and always how can we be elevating, as it says in here, kind of that learning community. So I look forward to getting, more into that and presenting more. So tell me what you guys think. If we think this is valuable, great. I don't want to add another piece to our week. But if you think there's some opportunity for continuity of board reporting, then, we can use this, and it'll help Nancy, Mrs. Gus now, but Nancy also with our board reports for her. And then the other thing is I got a couple of just brief edits on the board norms. Kind of the spirit of the norms are obviously still intact, but I wanted to give these to you and then just get back to me over the next couple of weeks in terms of your feedback. I made a couple of notes at the bottom. One is I'm going to follow up with Stephanie about a process, the process that you referred to about the 2 weeks to set the agenda versus the 10 days. And I, in what time I had this afternoon, looked at the policy, and I could not find it. So we can I could talk to you and make sure I understand what you're saying. It doesn't really impact the intention of the first norm, but I want to make sure that we realize that the agenda is set over a period of 2 weeks, you know, and so, you know, agenda items and those kind of things can get sent, you know, throughout. And then there's one other note about item norm number four about time. So take a look at that. Tell me what you think, and then we'll bring it back for final.
And I think the one might just be morning because I read it as it had to be 2 weeks before, not
No, because that's when I wrote you back. I said, you know, I know it says the word term is to set the agenda, and set sounds firm. I think the intention is that over the 2 week period it gets organized. So. Yeah. So anyway, so that's that. So thanks for doing that.
But it really can't be 2 week period.
No, but it's like that first week is because
that's gonna be pretty tough.
Because
I think you need to be like 5 days or something a little tighter.
That,
we are gonna be.
Yeah, that next.
You're not gonna get a packet on Thursday
because we moved. Yeah, right. Because the packet's been moved. We got it on Thursday.
You gotta back everything up.
So it's a whole day ahead now.
Because I expect my team to have all of our information on my desk by Tuesday afternoon of the week prior to your board meeting. So literally you have Monday night of the board meeting. You should give any agenda items that by that Sunday, that Monday morning,
so they can be included.
Because those are going to be really tough if it's any time after, even saying that. I mean, it's almost like Friday. You have like 4 days.
It's really up until that next president meeting, so like that Monday, Tuesday, because
so
you guys
need
rotate
to do some backing
that
up to make sure that it can't be 2 weeks.
Yeah, no. That's why I said
I
couldn't find what she was talking about, so I wanted to make sure.
I think at one point Paul had said, like, try to get us agenda items 10 days before the meeting, so that's where that came from.
Okay.
I mean, I know they need to get them in advance, but I was just saying, I don't think you can do it 2 weeks before the meeting because you need to wait until you're having a meeting to maybe realize, oh, I want this on the
list. So I couldn't find it, but a good point. And now that we've backed up a whole day, it means us getting in further advance. I have a request, and I would do this via Nancy or Mrs. Gust through email, but I'm the student services parent advisory council rep for the 3 months, and I saw the one of the co-chairs today at the meeting, Shana, and the meeting got changed at the last minute because there's a speaker that some of the parents want to hear. So it was supposed to be on the 22nd of September, which is next Tuesday, and I was going to be able to get to it by 8 o'clock because I have a meeting that night till 7:45. However, it's been moved to the 24th, and I have a high school meeting that night. So I just want to see if anybody I'd be willing to switch with somebody to take a PTA meeting for them versus that. So think about it, look at your schedules, and then get back to me. Because I know that's always our intention to make sure we have a board liaison. It's 7 to 9 at Forest Glen.
On the 24th?
On the 24th, yeah. So anyway, let me know later if you can do it, and that way I'll switch with, you know, whomever that can do it. Right. Thank you.
I didn't do my board report yet. Sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Yep. Didn't see you.
Just a couple things. Really, I didn't have any official PTA meetings, but I did go to curriculum nights at 3 of our schools.
Mm-hmm.
So 4 and 12, which I thought was pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm.
So just a couple of things a couple of takeaways from that. One that I would discuss that the Franklin curriculum night, they had the Spanish teachers come in and talk about the FLEX summer camps. And they talked about how it was 1 week and they had different camps for the different grades. And then this year they'll look to do it again and they'll have one for grade 1, 2, and 3, like they're rolling up you know, the camps. And it sounds like, I know from looking at the costs that I've gotten before from Paul, it sounds like it's pretty self-funding. That the parents pay tuition, and you know that pretty much covers the cost for this FLEX camp. So it had me thinking when they were, and I know I brought this up before, but it reminded me when I heard about it at curriculum night last week that I think, and somebody even sitting next to me had asked, like, why don't we have a STEAM camp or you know a literacy writing camp? Why do we just have a FLEX camp? Because I'm sure parents pay for tutors in the summer and things like that. I'm sure that parents would be willing to pay. To do those sort of camps as well, that would probably be self-funding and maybe even be able to, you know, make enough to fund some kids that need like a scholarship to attend those, or it could be even treated maybe as summer school for some of those kids. And I know we've done away, we did away with summer school. Maybe this is something we could, I just think it's something to revisit. It seems like that Flex Camp is popular. They're planning on doing it next summer, and I feel like we have other areas of academics that we could be focusing on in the summers too that parents would be interested in.
Did Veronique say in her report that PTA Council, did they talk about that, Kurt, about doing a math? Did she mention that? Some kind of
she
math?
Said no, it was a, she said something about STEAM, but they were doing like a
theater
or something. Theater.
Wasn't
it? It was not.
Oh, it was a music camp.
Music camp.
Music camp.
I knew there was some kind of camp. Sorry. Okay.
No,
thank
you. I mean, like more kind of an academic.
Yeah.
I'm thinking more like academic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You know, just wanted to mention that because I personally never, I didn't totally understand why we did away with summer school. I think there's some value, especially when we talk about our achievement gap. I think there's some things we could do over the summer to help some of those kids. Hadley, the big topic of discussion at Hadley was the grading system. So I feel I had to bring it up tonight. There's a lot of explanation on the part of the teachers, and I think the big concern that people have, I know from the elementary school, I've heard parents say, well, I like the numbers. It seems to, you know, put a little bit more definition to things than the not meeting, progressing. But at the Hadley level, I think parents see it a completely different way because they're looking to send their kids to West. And now they're like, okay, we have a 5-point scale. Like, West has a 5-point scale, but our scale doesn't align with theirs. Like, for example, at West, a 5 would translate to an A because I think they use grading numbers.
It's weighted, too.
I'm trying to understand.
Yeah.
But a 5 is, but it's weighted above even a 5.
Well, because it depends on if it's.
Right.
AP or
right, but that it's weighted above a 5. Just their basic 1 through 5 isn't weighted. A 5 is if you score 90% to 100%. 4 is 80% to 90%. 3 is 70% to. And ours, I brought this because I nearly forget. But it's, you know, a 5 is 95% to 100%. A 4 is 85% to 94%. A 3 is 75% to 84%. And so there's a lot of questions, you know, circling that. Questioning that we changed our grading scale, but why did we go to a 5-point scale that's not aligning with West, which is one of the biggest concerns of Hadley parents. Mm-hmm. So I didn't really have a good answer for that. I know the teachers were saying if you had questions to contact the administration about it. But yeah, there was several parents. My husband and I both went. He did one kid, I did another kid, and he said there were parents in the rooms he were in and there were parents in the rooms that I were in that were saying, wait, why did we do it on a 5-point scale and it still doesn't align with West? So, for what it's worth, I think...
Because one of the comments today of PTA Council from the Hadley president was the rubric, the 5-point scale, was a huge success. So that... That's just what I heard at PTA today. The parents really
like
that.
They
like
the 5-point scale, but then when the teachers broke it, I don't think all the teachers did it. I know like in science they did it, in math, and they looked at the percentages, they were like, well, wait a second, those percentages don't even line up with West. So it's not the issue that we have a 5-point scale, it's an issue that our percentages don't line up with West.
And it would be good to know, maybe it's because of the material, the curriculum, how they teach, and all those things.
There's two teachers do it differently?
They explained it differently.
They explained it differently,
well, no,
or the ranges are
no,
different.
Well, I think, like, for example, in literacy, they don't necessarily use the percentages as much. They're more using the rubric. Whereas in science and math, they're going to look at the percentages a lot more, so they take a lot more time to
quit. And those are the same percentages I heard.
You're right.
That's
so they're really the same percentages.
So that's probably why. I mean, I think it might have been the content. But it's not an issue with the 5-point scale. It's an issue that the percentages don't align. Because kids, I have an 8th grader. I know how they operate. And they, like, get the percentages in their head, and I do worry that, I mean, I guess in my mind, in high school and in college, like an A is an A, you're 90% above your A, and I feel like there's going to be a little confusion, like we might be a 4 in middle school, but that could be an A in West, but it might not be an A. Mm-hmm.
So we're actually more strenuous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So
good
one of the questions that I asked
Pete Monahan, the principal, was about that. Are our kids confused when they come up? And I said, could you please reach out to teachers? Could you please reach out to your athletic director? He said, no, because we continuously talk about our grades all the time and what it means, because somebody had indicated early on that so many athletes had dropped out or had to be kicked off. And he's like, well, that's not true, because we're always talking about our grades. We're not seeing this confusion piece. And that was just reaching out to Pete Monahan and him only speaking to a couple people, but just for what it's worth.
Well, I know we had at one point there was an explanation that we didn't have grades in District 41 because we didn't want to put the pressure of grades on kids. And it seems just odd to me that our grading scale is more strenuous than the high school, if that's true. But
okay.
That's my...
All right.
Well, I guess at some point for me, and it doesn't have to be the night, I guess I'd wonder, my question is why? What advantage do we get out of that not aligning Big Lombard West? So, again, you'll have to answer that tonight.
Let me know
the thought process on that one. So.
But just food for thought, Lombard West isn't all aligned. Just know that different contents do things differently over there. They have some who are very standards-based grading. They have others who are not. So there's not that same consistency. So when answering that question, it's going to be a little more challenging. Just because we've reached out.
Well, the grading scale is the same, right? I mean, it doesn't matter if you're in math or you're in English, right? It's all the same grading scale. Why is our grading scale different? We had to have thought about this. We had to have had discussions when we changed it. What was the reasoning behind that? I guess is what I'd just
okay.
like to see at some point.
All right.
To see, you know, why we did it. Maybe it'll make sense to me after
okay.
I see it.
And just a couple other points I wanted to mention. And, you know, I parents overall, you know, I've said a million times, they love our teachers, but, you know, there is a little concern. At some of the curriculum nights, you know, some of the teachers were saying, you know, there's the new schedule, it's the AB schedule, and, you know, but we're going to make it work. And I think there was definitely, I witnessed that. There's kind of some anxiety that, you know, are we just trying to make something work? And is it really what's best for kids? And I just would ask that we're really evaluating kind of what we're doing in our schools. You know, no disrespect to PTA Council, but, you know, to say looping is working, I mean, I've kind of heard the opposite. People are concerned about looping for numerous reasons. There's concerns of inconsistencies, too, looping differently at schools. We have teachers that aren't specializing. Teachers that are teaching both literacy and STEAM, you know, and they have two different classes of kids, so parents are saying, well, my kid has a teacher that doesn't specialize, so, you know, are they at a disadvantage because of that? I'm not saying our teachers can't handle it, but, you know, the purpose of specialization is so the teachers can delve deeper. So I'm still hearing a lot of that, and, you know, the schedule, I think, is a big concern. I know it feels like we're trying to make things work, but I don't know if we're making the best decision for kids. There's an issue with Lincoln kindergartners and PE. They both morning and afternoon have 60 minutes of PE a week. However, the morning kindergartners have it 3 days a week for 20 minutes, and the afternoon kindergartners have it for 2 days for 30 minutes. And I know the explanation's been given. You know, that's just the schedule and trying to fit everything in. That's how we had to make it work, but. The afternoon kindergarten parents are a little concerned because, you know, we don't get recess. Even though we added 30 minutes to the school day, we don't really get recess in kindergarten. They kind of start out at the beginning of the year with it, but then it gets phased out as supposedly they build up stamina for learning. So kind of a concern. Now we have a three-hour block for kindergartners. And are the morning kindergartners going to be an advantage if they have PE an extra day where they get that brain break that afternoon kindergartners don't? You know, just another example of our schedule. And
well, the kindergarten teachers need to talk to each other and assess that. Yeah, have that conversation.
It's an inconsistency within the kindergarten at one school.
But
I don't forget, and I know Dean wants to get out of it, but I don't mean to prolong this. But Stephanie and I did go to, we visited Lincoln and Franklin. We just went in and took a look at it. And I know Dr. Gordon said that he had visited three of the schools and he thought they had ample time. We were at Lincoln, and absolutely the first graders did not have enough time. I mean, we watched it
for
eating their lunch.
Mm-hmm.
We watched the first graders shoveling their food down as quick as they could. So I stood there and watched it. Now, at Franklin, what we were told is they were moving the first graders down earlier and with lower grade levels. They weren't mixed with upper grade levels. They had seemingly, then again, the same amount of time. Those kids, not ideal. Again, we can train kids to do whatever we need to train them to do. We can then go into the argument of this is best for kids. They seem to have more. They seem to be able to get their lunches down. But at Lincoln, we witnessed the hallways with the switch between classrooms prior to lunch. We watched the bottleneck there, trying to get first graders down. So there needs to be something worked out there. So because it didn't.
Is that the first week of school? First
doesn't matter whether it's the first week of school or not.
Well,
is what we do around here. We say, well, this will all work out. And you're right.
No.
They'll train themselves to eat their lunch.
I'm not saying that,
Kurt.
I'm just saying that I know that a couple of the principals, when I went to visit school, said the first week of school is a lot of transition. I mean, kindergarten's learning the process and all that. I'm not downplaying what you're saying because it's an uber sensitivity. So certainly the principals are keeping an eye on it.
I would say from what I witnessed, I mean, it was running as quickly and smoothly as they could. I mean, the teachers knew what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
Lunch, I mean, everybody was, all
those
moving parts were going.
Efficient.
It wasn't
mm-hmm.
a lack of
mm-hmm.
effort or
mm-hmm.
on anyone's part. It's just, I mean, physically, the amount of time it takes, it's just really, you know, really hard to manage, you know, realistically.
And
sure the principals are keeping
well,
in mind.
And not to pick on Lincoln either, because I know it, like, Franklin, you know, they're having issues with, the kids have to actually physically switch their lockers before lunch. They have to get all of their belongings, coats, gym shoes, backpacks, and they take it from the morning class, which might be up. They switch floors because it's the second through fifth grade.
And that was brought up at council.
You know, they have to switch floors, and you have kids like carrying all their stuff, and they get to their afternoon locker upstairs, and those kids haven't come out of class yet, so they're standing there waiting, and they can't go to lunch until the afternoon kids or till the upstairs kids get the stuff out of the locker so they can put their belongings
mm-hmm.
in. So there's, you know, there's a lot of logistic things going on. And like I said, I think...
And I'm not sure, you know, when we look at the...
So
block.
Stopping by, viewing by myself and checking in with the principals, seeing how kids are eating, watching them eat, because I disagree. I see something very different. In those lunchrooms, I see kids eating. I see kids talking. I see kids being able to go outside in a timely fashion. And I see principals, assistant principals, and the staff at the lunch for any of those kids who don't finish on time to stay. There's no rush to get out.
They go into an office to eat by themselves. So it's that.
So that
two and a half minutes,
because we've reduced it by 5 minutes. So that 2.5 minutes of eating. That's what we're talking about.
Well, I'm telling you what I saw.
And I'm telling you what I saw.
I don't know if you were at Lincoln.
I was at every school, and I've been at every school too.
In the report.
And that was the report.
So I don't know if Lincoln was
so
one of those.
So I visited every school. I've seen them.
We watched it, and I'm sorry. I'm gonna absolutely disagree.
And again, we
come down to Erica's point. You know, we can talk about schedules. We can talk about these kinds of things. But and you know what? In the end, again, you'll train the kids to do this kind of stuff. You'll train them. I mean, you talked about your wife being sad because she dropped your daughter off at college. That's a normal reaction. That's an 18-year-old woman. Imagine somebody's 5-year-old that's trying to wolf their lunch down, and you're saying, well, I think it's fine. And you know what? In the end, probably by the end of the year, they'll have trained themselves to do that. But the stressors we put them under, are they necessary? Are they necessary stressors when we're talking about what we're doing for kids? Are these the kinds of things that we do? And, you know, again, I'm going to continue to monitor this and take a look at it, and I'll continue to report it. So,
I do have a question, though, because I know we said we
how
should.
Many do
well, this
is this on the same thing?
It's are on we, the same thing.
Are we on other or on
board? I don't know where we're at.
Where are we on?
We are board, on board report. Quick board report. Board. Go ahead.
Because it's a question I've asked, and I'm curious, I'd like to get an answer to. I know in the MOU, the teacher agreement, the transition time is built in there, 10-minute transition between morning and afternoon for lunch. But for first grade, that's for second through fifth. First grade, that 10 minutes has core instruction time. So, I mean, in my mind, unless we're not following the MOU, first grade lunch is shorter, and they don't have a built-in transition time. But maybe that's not being followed, or are we at, is there a transition time built into the first grade schedule?
I think that question's been asked internally by staff as well. Mm-hmm. It's not been answered.
So, okay. You know, and I hear a lot of people saying we added 35 minutes to the school day. It's longer than Hadley, you can say we didn't shorten lunch because we added the transition time. So even if lunch technically wasn't shortened, I think people thought lunch was kind of short and rushed before, and I think parents, it feels like, you know, our kids, they're in school longer, and, I mean, adults even need a break if you go to a seminar or a training session, and I feel it's just, we're just trying to cram it all in, and lunch has become something like, well, they only need 15 minutes to eat, so go in and inhale your food and run outside and run around for a few minutes, and you know, in my mind, that sitting at lunch and sitting at the lunch table and talking to your friends, like, that's part of, you know, part of the learning process, too. And I didn't see kids being crazy in the lunchroom. I saw them all nice sitting. It was loud, but, you know, I don't think that if it was a few minutes longer, it would be horrible. And it just saddens me that it's just come to the point that we have to just cram it all in. Let's, like, cut PE down to 4 days a week. We don't need recess in kindergarten. We're going to make those 5-year-olds learn for 3 hours. And it's just, and maybe that's the way public education is going, but I feel like we've lost sight of their little kids.
I think, I know the principals are sensitive to this, because every school I went to, that was one of the first things is we're monitoring things, to your point, Kurt. We're watching it. And, you're right. It's a new structure, so it's the first year. You have to look at it. I agree.
Well, and the principals are making the schedules, but they're not the ones who are coming up with, you know, what we're supposed to be getting done in the day. That's coming down from an administrative level. They're just trying to fit it all in. So I'm not, you know, it's
food for thought.
Fitting it in.
Do you have anything else? Do you have another one? Yeah, set.
That was all I had on my report.
Thank you. Upcoming meetings, September 28th, 2015, Board of Education regular meeting at 7:30. Make a note, that's at Abraham Lincoln School, not here.
Okay.
7:30 at Abraham Lincoln School. October 13th, 2015, Board of Education regular meeting, 7:30, back here at Central Services Office. All right. Any other? I think we hit some of the other in board reports. All right.
I just have one other. I just want to read my comments just a little bit on record from the August 10th meeting minutes under adoption of the 2015-2016 budget. The first sentence here, I had another sentence I added to it. I'm just going to read the whole statement.
Mm-hmm.
Mrs. Clark commented that she is not comfortable with spending funds to support the plan to accelerate the advancement of FLEX to the 4th and 5th graders to fill a 45-minute block of time during the school day. She said this does not follow the plan to roll up Spanish year to year, offered 30 minutes every day. She also expressed that it is basically put together to fill a schedule gap and couldn't less expensive resources be used to offer something lacking in the curriculum, such as handwriting or keyboarding.
Thank you. Anything else? All right. Adjourn to closed session. May I have a motion to adjourn to closed session to discuss the appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees of the district or legal counsel for the district, including hearing testimony on a complaint lodged against an employee or against legal counsel for the district to determine its validity.
Motion.
Second.
Roll call.
Mr. Richardson?
No.
Mr. Elder?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mrs. Clark?
Yes.
Mr. Buchholz?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Okay. All right, thank you. There'll be no action taken when we return. May I have a motion to adjourn the regular meeting?
I make a motion to adjourn the regular meeting.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.